Welcome back to Ladies with Gumption, episode 170, Hostile Takeover. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DCTV in a flash. I am May, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and Jessica.
As always, you can find us over on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. We're over in the Gmails as well, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. You can listen to all the episodes of our podcasts over on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. We would like to give a special shout out to Paolo for fixing our Spotify issue. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
That was a lifesaver. So we really appreciate you and are grateful that you listen and that you work at Spotify. We do have a Patreon. So if you are interested in listening to us talk about other things besides DCTV with certain exceptions like Doom Patrol and Titans, a little bit of Titans, really, but we do
Netflix 2 minutes of Titans.
Yeah, we do Netflix series like Shadow and Bone. We've done Upload over on Amazon, The Boys. We have done Doom Patrol Parts 1 and Part 2 of a 10-episode season 3. We're gonna do Eternals next. You season 3 is coming up. We've done You season 2. We've done The Witcher before.
The Witcher comes out in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So
be prepared.
Oh, or
re-listen to that one so you can caught up on the season.
Indeed. So you can reach us there at patreon.com/DCTVGumption if you're in the giving mood. This past week was Giving Tuesday. Just putting it out there. And for the patrons already signed up, we graciously thank you because you are a big help to keeping this podcast going, and we very much appreciate you. Over in the news, we have no news. Do we have not news? We have, Robbie Amell is coming back to The Flash.
Oh, yeah.
In episode 11 of season 8 for a 2-episode arc. What that arc is, we have no idea. It will exist. And we already know that Rick Cosnett is coming back as Eddie, but Eddie is going to be in a different episode. So we don't know what's going to happen.
I feel like he was in, wasn't that like the filming right after Armageddon? So I feel like he's like in episode 6 or 7 or something.
Yeah, I think so too. But yeah, I think that's it for news. We are down
to
shows.
I just want
to
say that clearly Robbie is going to be playing Marcus.
Clearly.
Because
we haven't met him yet, right?
Yeah,
I don't know why he would show up like, you know, 6 episodes too late for him again, but sure.
Because that part was real, obviously. It was before they were, I don't know, whatever. Or, you know, just some things stay the same. Some things are just too crucial to all universes.
That would be hilarious.
I want the bat now. That's what I want.
Hilarious. I am ready. As usual, we do Joy No Joy feedback and the Gumption of the Week. We're down 2 shows as of next week, but because last week was Thanksgiving, we're doing Batwoman mid-season finale, Legends of Tomorrow season finale, and 2 episodes of The Flash, episodes 2 and part 3 of Armageddon. And to take us away on this journey is Jessica.
So, oh my gosh, so much happened on, I kind of want to skip over into like the last couple of minutes of this week's episode, but we're going to back it up and go over the first, you know, first episode. So this side A is called Unbroken Chain of Sorrow / Quid Pro Quo. So in this episode, 802, Despero warns the Flash that great tragedies will befall the Speedster and cause him to lose his mind. Once that happens, Armageddon will begin, which is kind of crazy because the end of the world is in 2031, so like this would be like 10 years of Barry terrorizing Central City. I don't know how that works, but whatever. With Barry Barry concerned for her safety, Iris promises to spend the day, a boring day, with Cecile and Jenna. Frost wants Chester to build a weapon designed to kill Despero, which makes Chester, who is a pacifist, uncomfortable. Determined to prove Despero wrong in his prediction, Barry doubles down on trying to prove his innocence, but gets tripped up by a series of unfortunate events. Star Labs gets shut down due to a radiation leak, which is forcing the team to evacuate the premises and forcing Barry to erase Gideon, lest her files be discovered and Barry is exposed to the Flash. So we have no more Gideon. Then, when Barry shows up to a crime scene, which involves a police officer being not in his right mind, which Barry thinks is going to happen to him, he is shocked when Kristen Kramer bans him from the crime scene because apparently Barry is under investigation of being involved in some illegal activities connected to Joe Carver and Black Hole. Dun, 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 which obviously Barry has no recollection of. Barry, believing the Meta responsible for incapacitating the guard, whose name is Zoltar, the Meta, not the guard, and he thinks this is why he has gaps in his memory, so he confronts her, but the meeting doesn't go as expected, and the next thing he knows, he's staring down the barrel of a big-ass gun pointed at him by Caitlin and a scared Allegra and Chester in the middle of a destroyed West Island loft. Temporarily convincing Team Flash he's regained his sanity, Barry confronts Zoltar again and succeeds in breaking her psychic link. He thinks that he has averted the prophecy, but the team is concerned that Barry does not remember that Joe died 6 months ago. Confused, Barry rushes to the West House, and the devastating revelation is confirmed by Iris and it upsets the seal. And while scenes of an irate Flash, harming Central City citizens plays out on the news. Convinced he's seen enough, Despero comes to finish what he started, and Barry barely escapes and gets to the Hall of Justice, where he calls Jefferson and invokes the Injustice Protocol, and that is where we end it on 802. Do we want to discuss 802 first, or should I just go into 803?
You can do 803, and then we just lump everything in together.
Okay, so in 803, Barry meets Black Lightning, aka Jefferson Pierce, at the Hall of Justice. And he is explaining, he doesn't really explain very well. He's just like, you gotta take my powers, man. I'm gonna go crazy. And Jeff is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold on, back up. Let's talk this through. But basically, Barry's, the Injustice Protocol is the contingency plan that Batman in the comics, but I don't know who created it in this universe, that the Justice League created to stop one another if they happen to go to the dark side. So Barry's Injustice buddy is Jeff, and Jeff is supposed to be able to take away Barry's connection to the Speed Force. And so while they are working on that, Iris has an idea from when Barry's saying that he can't remember, he thinks that there's something wrong with Joe's death. So she decides that maybe we should take a closer look at it. And she brings up this idea to Cecile and the team, and Cecile just goes berserk on her, does not want to even consider it, would rather spend the time finding Barry to save him from Despero, who is still looking for Barry because he wants to kill him. Because basically, he's like, you had your chance, and now it's time. So Iris and Allegra go off to investigate Joe's death while at the station where Joe tripped and fell into a train. Iris sees a dust-like thing that only she can see. Allegra can't see it. And she doesn't really know what the meaning of it is, but when they're at the station, the security guard does confirm that Joe did trip and fall in front of the train and die. And that's how he dies. Iris is a little bit disappointed, but Allegra does some extra legwork, and she figures out that this train, which has been on time, regular at maintenance, is usually late, but this time it was 15 minutes early. So she thinks there's something more to investigate. And while they're talking, Iris notices this dust particle thing again, and now she's starting to connect the dots. So she goes back to the station where she meets Dion when they're scheduled for her regular time sickness therapy. And instead of doing the therapy, Iris asks Dion to undo what they already did and let all the time sickness in so she can get a better understanding of what she's seeing and what it means. So he undoes it, and they discover that these little dark isotopes that are in the air, basically someone has tapped into the negative still force and is changing and altering timelines in the past. So Barry and Iris were right that Joe's death is shady and not supposed to happen. So we discovered that. Meanwhile, Cecile is on her one-woman show because she knows Barry better than anyone. Thinks that she can find him. She enlists the help of Rosa Dillon, aka the Top, to combine their psychic powers to out-psychic the psychic, Despero, and find Barry first. Chester creates a television that acts as a psychic link and antenna to show them where Barry is, and they, with their combined minds, can search all of the mines in Central City. Cecile finds this very taxing. Meanwhile, Rose is having an orgasm over all the minds that she can touch now. And Caitlin hones in on the fact that Cecile is having such an erratic display of behavior because she's trying to shut out all of her feelings about Joe. And she's like, no, you need to feel all your feels. Don't shut him out. And so Cecile taps into the power of love and is able to get stronger. They find Barry. Despero finds them because he's hijacked the particle accelerator from Star Labs. So he finds them. He attacks Top and gets her half of the information, wants Cecile to get the other half of the information. She gets attacked, but she's able to fend him off. Barry, meanwhile, is trying to bait Jefferson into stripping him of his powers. Despero gets there in the middle of it first. Actually, Jefferson kind of like calms Barry down with his "whose life is it" mantra, and then Despero comes in, and then Barry is saved by Dion and Iris, who give him enough still force to be able to run to the future and see what is causing this disturbance. Barry runs to 2031, where he sees that there is a West party going on. He's like, I'm a West, I'm half of West Allen, what's going on? So he goes in, and he is surprised to find an engagement party for Iris West and, dun dun dun, Eobard Well Spawn.
Gasps!
They see, when Iris and the group see that Barry has crashed their party, they are not pleased to see him. And that is a cliffhanger we are left off on episode 3. So, that was a lot to digest. Starting with episode 2, I guess. What about parts 2 and 3 sparked joy for you?
Well, part 2 is a bit tougher than part 1. So I guess I'll say I thought that Zotar, like, had cool makeup. It was a cool idea. Wish we'd seen more Zotar. Also, glad that they did do the Joe reveal in that episode as opposed to try to, like, maybe save it for longer. I don't know. Glad we got the ball rolling on that front. And that we got to see Jefferson. It's always, you know, was the promise of something happening in the next episode, even though it happened at the very, very end. I think that Allegra and Chester have a cute little chemistry, whatever it is, whether it's friendly or, like, you know, something more. So when they are sectioned off in their little scenes together, at least it just, like, it gives me the vibe that, like, they do know each other and they are friends and they do care about each other, which is not necessarily something that I always feel with Team Flash as a whole nowadays. Also liked the West Allen scene early on in the loft and how Barry was worried about, like, the first thing he's worried about when he hears, like, something horrible is gonna happen is Iris. So that's always nice. I feel like there is so much more to say, but most of it is, like, I didn't, it's kind of hard, because I was, like, I enjoyed the first episode, even though I thought it was, like, a bit, like, slow, right, moving to get into the event of the narrative, and then the second one, it wasn't slow, but it felt like it didn't, it felt like it sped through things that it could have been showing us, so it's, like, hard to know what parts I wanted to or that, like, I was, like, happy to see. But I guess I'm glad that Jenna was alive. I like confirming that Jenna was alive. That was great. And I actually, even though, like, if I pretend that last season didn't happen, I liked the scene with Kramer and Barry. When it was just like this, like, the way that they, like, managed to make you feel like that growing sense of, like, off-kilterness, I guess. Like, everything is wrong in every scene. There's, like, something building to be more wrong than before. To the point that, like, of course, Barry's going to be like, well, obviously, this is a conspiracy. Because I don't remember myself just doing this minutes ago. So, yeah. I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about on the good side. So, there you go.
For episode 2, I generally did like the feeling of unsettlement as everything sort of unraveled. Because it was very... I mean, this, like, event or whatever is less... focus on the action-y stuff and more focus on, like, Barry himself and what he's losing. You know, he found out Joe's dead here. He lost his job. He lost Star Labs. Hallelujah. it got shut down and, you know, losing all of, like, he lost Gideon and the data that they had acquired over the years and all of this other stuff that is a part of his day-to-day life. which is really interesting when you, it like, it really felt like there was an emotional impact, at least for him. You know, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe all of this stuff is happening. So you're like, what the hell is going on? So I liked the general feeling of not knowing what was happening and also feeling very disconcerted by all of it, because it was very, it was a lot to take in at the same time. And it just kept getting worse and worse. Like, you know, I believe Eric now that he's like, it's the worst day of Barry's life. I was like, yes, it actually is the worst. Now it's just getting worse and worse and worse. So I really liked all of that stuff. And I just generally like, I guess, comparing it to other crossovers, what's nice about this one is that there are actually stakes for Barry, like emotional stakes. It's not like he's pushed aside or whatever. Like, this is his story. This is about him, you know, I guess, going mad or whatever Despero thinks he's going to do later on. Even like the pockets of time that he's missing were really well done. Like him just showing up. We as the audience don't really see what happened, but the team is just like freaked out by him. And then like we seeing what he does with Central City and everybody, all the people. So it was just deeply, unsettling. And I like that feeling because it's, you know, it was better than being bored, I suppose, because, you know, season 8, you're like, well, I don't know what else they're going to do. But, you know, I think that they're crafting something interesting here so far. And I did like the West Allen scene in the loft and just feeling like, you know, there's still just like that whole line sort of foreshadows what happens in episode 3, right? Like with Iris saying, like, no matter what, we're destined to be together. And then we'll talk about that. But I think overall, like, it was a generally, I wouldn't say enjoyable episode, it's like the wrong word, but I like the, you know, the foundations that they were laying for the story to set up like what was going to happen in season 3. And I still think, I mean, I'll get to the end of dislikes, but yeah.
Well, I don't think enjoyable is the wrong word. I think I liked this episode more than one. Just the pace of it, I felt like, you know, because things are moving. And I agree with you that its whole thing is very unsettling. And it's unsettling in an interesting way because we are on the outside, but we're also on the outside with the lead. So he doesn't know and we don't know what's going on. So I felt like that added like an extra layer of like engagement with the audience that, you know, the other characters know things that we and Barry don't know. And we're kind of like figuring out together and how all of these things are happening, like one after the other. Star Labs, like getting shut down for a radiation leak and, you know, the stuff, like the panel on the wall is corroded. I'm like, how in the world did y'all not do safety checks on this, on your like secret layer or whatever? I thought, you know, having to get rid of Gideon and that being like a final thing, and Barry like, is there any way we can save you? And she's like, no. So like the finality of it in the middle of the day, like we still have stuff to do. But you know, that finality of like losing Gideon and that being a thing, the fact that he, Kristen kind of drops on him that he's being investigated. And I'm like, what? Barry investigated? Like, what is going on? Because we thought that, you know, from Despero's conversation that the bad things start now. But apparently the bad things have been happening for a while. And Barry and the audience just didn't know they were happening. So we're kind of like, you know, getting assaulted with all these different new pieces of information at once. So I think, you know, while there, I feel like it's, while there isn't like specific scenes or I guess like things like, oh my God, this was the amazing, best thing ever. I think like overall the pace of the story and how it unfolded, I thought was really interesting. It kind of kept you invested whether or not you thought this was like particularly emotional or cool episode or not. I think it moved really well. Particular scenes. I really liked Chester and Allegra's conversation about why he's a pacifist. I thought that was a really nice layer that we revealed about Chester's backstory. And why he doesn't create, because I swear, like, when he was talking about, like, his friend, like, he made this, you know, ray gun or whatever, I thought it was going to be, like, you know, the one of the stories where kid finds their dad's gun and tragedy ensues. But luckily, he just burned down the house and not his friend. So I guess that was, like, good, you know, bright side of that. But I just thought it was, like, really interesting kind of like look into Chester and why he kind of feels the way that he feels. And I like that Allegra was there to be his friend in that moment and to give him another alternative. Like, you don't have to. I feel like Chester is very much of a people pleaser, and we saw like kind of like how he kind of deteriorated the previous episode when he guessed wrong what Ray was wanting, and that just like destroyed his whole personal being. So having Allegra tell him that, you know, you don't have to do what people want you to do if it's not who you are. You can find another way to do that. So I liked their conversation a lot. Star Labs getting shut down. Joy. Hallelujah. but yeah, I thought it moved pretty well. I liked, you know, the West Island scene, of course, that she thought was going to be like a boring day. And then like the twist that Joe had died, because, you know, we thought all the stuff was done when he defeated Zoltar or whatever. And then they drop the Joe bomb, like, Joe is dead? Like, what? And then kind of, like, spirals Barry out again. So I really liked that those, like, different twists. Like, obviously it's not great that Joe's dead, but the twist that, you know, because we've been wondering, like, what had happened to Joe? Why was that line between Chester and Seal? Why is it Seal? Who is she sad about? You know, all this kind of stuff. So I thought that was, that moved pretty well. Okay, so let's... Do you want to do Joy, Joy, and then No Joy, No Joy? Or do you want to do Joy, No Joy, Joy, No Joy? What flows better for you?
I don't
do Joy, No Joy.
Yeah.
Just keep them separate. Okay. Yeah. So for 802, what did not spark Joy? What did you not like?
Well, I mean, I think everything that you said was true, except... I, once again, maybe just black out, like, I just don't remember things from the show anymore, but just like,
well, to be fair, it was like a week ago. You had a week, yes. And then you had a brand new Flash episode that's, yes, like sensory overload. So.
No, but I mean, like, even further back, just like that time that I didn't remember that Allegra called Chester a nickname, and then I was like, why is she calling him this literally every word? And now I feel like she's not doing that anymore, so it's very confusing. But anyway. Did we know Chester was a pacifist before last?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I feel like we did. I feel like he's mentioned it before, like early on.
Okay. Because I felt like I was thinking like this should be something that is built up over time. Like there should, how could they not come across situations, right? Mm-hmm. Where him being a pacifist conflicts with the fact that he's on a team of superheroes, or at least maybe now one superhero, we've like reduced it down to just Barry. But still, like Barry's entire thing, like Barry's not just like, I guess, you know what, maybe since he messed Chester, that's why he's talking villains now, down now. It's not a lack of budget. It's
he's been changed by Chester.
I was gonna say, like, I feel like it's so weird that, like, now, suddenly, it's like, I'm a pacifist.
Like, it's not like Barry kills all of his villains or anything. So.
Yeah, Barry definitely isn't killing him, but, like, I'm like, it's still, like, violence. So, like, what kind of passive, like, what are we talking about? But anyway. I just was, like, confused that, like, it was, like, showing up now. I was like, I feel like this could have been seeded earlier. But if May says she remembers pacifism, I'm going to believe
it. I mean, I'm, like, 75% sure, but I remember him. I remember him using that specific word, like, early on in his introduction, but it was so long ago again.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I'm just going to be, like, a Frost apologist and be like, I don't think that she remembered either, so I don't feel
right.
Like...
I don't think she remembered. I'm sure she did not remember either. Yeah. Who is going to remember that? But anyway, so I just thought it was like a little bit funny, like that today was, you know, the day that we were going to have this discussion for Chester and Allegra. But anyway, aside from that, I just wish that like Zoltar is like a person whose powers are very cool. Like that whole concept would have been really cool to actually explore. I know we've done variations of it in the past where people are influenced by a villain, began acting differently. But once again, just like the first episode, I kept expecting it to actually be connected back to what is going on. And then it wasn't. It was like, well, we're done with that, but now back to the actual event. Just like the Royal Flush Gang, I kept waiting for, like, how are they connected to Despero? They are not. They are not. So anyway, that was why I was just like a little bit like, okay, well, never mind then. The biggest dislike, which I just may as well say, just like the switch that flipped on Cecile. Because it's like for, you know, episode one, she's acting pretty much normal, minus that weird moment where we were like, was that like an editing error? Like, what are we supposed to get from that? to then this episode, she was being a little bit weird, but not enough to really think she's actively grieving Joe's death until the moment Barry says, Joe isn't dead. And suddenly Cecile's like, every week, Barry, you just come in here and you just like tear up my grief and you just like make me relive this all over again. And I was like, what are you talking about? Why would you not immediately think that Barry is like sick or like something is wrong or like maybe time travel has occurred? You're literally, right. You're in the Flash's life, right? How many times has this happened that it could actually be that? So I don't know. I just thought it was like, obviously we'll talk about that more in the next episode, but this was the start of like, is Cecile okay? Actually, I'm not sure. And not in the, she must be so sad about Joe way, but like in the, there must be something actually wrong with her kind of way.
Yeah.
Also, like, while I think it added to like the off kilter feeling that I was talking about, like that, the growing tension of like, obviously something is very, very wrong. It just felt like everyone was behaving in a way that was like not quite themselves, except for maybe Iris. Like Iris is, and that's only like in terms of when it's revealed that Barry doesn't know what's going on and she's concerned about what that means. Like that's a normal response that I would expect Iris to have. While everyone else was like, is it time to kill Barry? Should we put him down? I'm not sure.
It's like, well, okay. Is Despera right?
Is Despera right? I was like, hello?
They're all such traitors. I was like, that's the first thought that you had? Okay.
The big red alien who wants to come kill Barry? You're like, you know what? He might have a point. Barry's kind of annoying. But anyway, on the flip side, though, the reveal that Joe is dead, like, where was that in... Like, why didn't Iris get to have moments like that? You know, why would Cecile be the only person that they give weird moments to indicate that Joe is dead? The only thing would be like, right. You know, obviously Iris saying, I'm going to go babysit baby Jenna. But it wasn't like somber face of, you know, I must now spend time with my sister.
I guess because it would have been too obvious.
Yeah, it would have been too obvious. But like, I felt like keeping that secret, as usual, always hurts Iris in some way. Everything hurts Iris. The other thing, too, and this is not the fault of the episode, so I cannot blame them for it. I thought the Joe reveal was really good. And it makes total sense to pick Joe, because that is who Barry would care about most after Iris. It makes total sense. But because, by no fault of his own, because he was injured, because the man deserves his rest, Jesse L. Martin has not been around as much lately for us to feel the absence of Joe. Like, for those two episodes, it wasn't like we were like, everything's different, everything feels so weird and different because Joe's not here, you know? Because he's already not been here. Cecile has already been replacing him in every facet. So that's all. I just wish that, you know, we could retroactively make Jesse L. Martin appear in things somehow in order for like me to feel the impact of that moment even more. But the good thing is, like, I remember looking at the response online and everyone was like, well, Joe can't be dead. That would be, you know, sacrilege.
Yeah. Like, it's like residual caring from like previous season about the character. He has made such a strong, loving impression. We all love Joe.
You cannot lose Joe, even if he just shows up once every 5 episodes to be like, wow, that was a hard day of not working today. So anyway, that was like my biggest point was just like, why is Cecile crazy? And, you know, why can't we have more Joe before we fake kill Joe?
I'm not willing to jump on the something's wrong with Cecile theory yet, just because before the whole Joe reveal happened, she was overreacting to even like Barry losing his job. She's like, this can't happen. I can't believe it. I'm like, well, you need to chill out. I don't know why you're reacting in this way, because it was just over the top. And that goes for the next episode too, but we'll discuss that later. It was like 10 times worse. But in this episode, it's like, it was just too much. And then her too overreacting with, you know, how Barry was reacting to Joe being dead. And like you said, you know, Iris doesn't get to react in that way. I mean, like, her face said it also, like, well, my dad died. How could you not know this? But she doesn't get the same space to feel things as Cecile is, even though Cecile's, like, more wild about it, you know? And unnecessarily so. But it, and it's Cecile also
feels him loudly.
Still feels loudly, apparently, which is a whole other thing. But it's interesting because, like, the one thing I will say about this episode is that there was, like, my small things, mostly because, like, Allegra, I was like, why is Allegra here? Allegra, go work as Citizen, you know? Like, she's, you know, fine, you're part of Team Flash, and I get that. But, like, you know, there just needs to be more of a balance in splitting the time between Star Labs or, like, Team Flash and then Team Citizen, because we still don't really get... We got a lot of it in the first episode, and I would like to see more of it. We got that little, you know, nice scene of, like, Iris doing the investigating because all their other satellites are down, you know, they can't do anything. But they're still not as much as there could be, specifically with, like, Allegra being tied to Iris, who's with the Citizen. So it's like, you could do a little bit more there. And
you know what I forgot to say? Mm-hmm. The one thing that I did like is that when Barry's like, we need someone that can expose the truth, he was talking about Iris.
Yeah.
Because the next scene, I thought that was good.
Oh, yeah, I like that too.
But yeah, like, just like the overreaction of Cecile, did not really like that. And I felt like it, everybody else played it fine, but sort of took away from, like, instead of adding more shock, it sort of was just like, okay, there was too much focus on her, and it, like, drew my attention away too much from, like, what was actually happening. Yeah, and I agree about the pacifist stuff. If it was, like, seeded a little bit, or they had talked about it a little bit more, because every once in a while, I know that they're, you know, they've been doing a generally good job of building character development for Chester over the last, like, two seasons. But I feel like they could do a little bit more in terms of, like, even his relationship with Allegra. Like, they play, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or whatever on the weekends, and it would just be nice if the show kind of got back to showing us the characters having a little bit more fun.
I liked that that's how she knew that he was off or not feeling
that was
great.
So cute.
Yeah. And as much as, like, it wasn't Frost's fault for not knowing that Chester was a pacifist, I still don't understand, like, now having seen also episode 3, I don't understand why they brought back Frost from her Eat, Pray, Love so soon. Because, like, what are you doing?
For no reason.
Right.
She's just, like, hanging out and doing, like, she didn't even get to react to, like, Star Labs. She doesn't really talk to Caitlin. So I was like, I don't know why she's here. If
she doesn't see Barry freak out about Jill being dead.
So, I don't know. It just felt like she didn't need to be there at all. So,
yeah, that was very weird. Like, why have Frost have that conversation with Chester unless she's the only one that would technically not listen to Chester wanted to know that he's a pacifist? Like, you could have had that conversation with Caitlin unless the impression is that Caitlin would have known that he's a pacifist. But I don't know. Or she's the only one violent enough to consider killing Despero. I don't know. But, like I said, I'll be a Frost apologist on that one and just say that that's not, like, her fault, that she didn't know that he doesn't like to kill people. So, whatever. First of all...
How could she know he doesn't want to kill people?
How could she know? Zoltar sounds like an antidepressant medication. Or is Zoloft, like, allergies? Like, what?
It was so irritating because the whole time I watched a screener of it, so I didn't have captions, which is very frustrating. The whole time I'm sitting there searching Zoltar, and there's an L in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got the whole wrong villain, and I got nothing out of it. A wasted search.
Yeah. So I didn't like the name. You know, there was some creative styling, but I do agree that she could have been an email. Like, I feel like there could have been more there. She's just kind of like a lame villain in the sense she's just like heist or whatever. So could have been done more there, but she's not really the main part of the episode. So I guess they just didn't really care. Obviously, Joe being dead is no bueno. But, like, I do agree with you that, although I do think that giving Iris a moment would have made it more obvious that Joe is gone before they wanted to have the Joe reveal. But even afterwards, like, when he goes to the West House and he's asking about Joe, any moment she could have had is overshadowed by Cecile.
Yes.
Going off and yelling and, you know, getting on Barry. And I don't think that it's, you know, I think it's on bad acting, May, because I feel like she's, even like before when she was like, going off about Barry losing his job, and they can't do that to you. The script is, you know, this what we would expect to be of her being like, oh my God, Barry lost his job. They can't do that to him. Right. But in this, and but just her delivery is off. But in this sense, the script is wrong. Like, why would she say that to him? And then her delivery is just like off the wall. So it just makes it even more like jarring for her to say to him and to react that way, that you don't really get a chance for Iris to kind of breathe in the middle of that and, you know, have a moment there. So I think that that's probably where that all kind of, you know, worked out or whatever. So I didn't really have, you know, I didn't have like big, I feel like you don't really have like big emotions one way or the other. Like there's like no like huge joys, no like really big, no joys. So I think it just kind of like moved around in the middle. And then we get to episode 3. And things just start going off the walls, with reactions. So what sparked joy about episode 3?
Well, the fact that we got a full, you know, interaction, like a full storyline with Jefferson and Barry was nice. And I loved that Jefferson was kind of acting as like the hope in that situation and being like, no, there's no way that I'm going to like take away your powers. I know that we can stop this. And I also know you, and I know that you're a hero, and you would not be like this. So I really enjoyed that. Also, when he and Barry kind of, like, recited Jefferson's, like, mantra for, like, his students from season 1 of Black Lightning, I was like, okay, you got me.
That was beautiful.
I'm in my feels. Yeah, that was great. I also like that it's like, okay, we're going to see them fight, but we're going to see them fight because Jefferson's like, I'm going to save you. And Barry's like, I'm going to kill your family if you save me. I was like, okay, Barry, that's a bit, you're being a bit dramatic there. But anyway, so yeah, I really liked all of their scenes, even if they probably, you know, could have had like one fewer scene, one scene could have been compressed. But otherwise, I'm glad that it finally felt like, not just like, okay, it finally feels like a crossover, but it feels like what I would have always wanted a crossover to be, which is where we actually get a real, like, you know, feeling and depth behind a certain dynamic outside of the show. And I thought that Cress and Grant had really nice chemistry where it feels like I can envision what their relationship is like and what their partnership as heroes in this Justice League society that we never see would be like. So that was nice. In the other storylines, I loved that in this episode, Iris does actually get a chance to expand on what she is feeling about her father's death, or, you know, maybe not death. I like that she made that logical leap from Barry saying something is off to, hey, you know what? Maybe something is off. Maybe because we live in a time warp. Sometimes there could be something going on. Let me look into
this.
There's
a glitch in the matrix.
Exactly. And I also feel like, you know, they kind of try to connect it to like her not wanting to admit that her dad is dead. Like maybe that's her way of dealing with her grief. Mm-hmm. And I like that we can maybe, you know, take it further back to like maybe she always thought there was something weird about it. And that's why, you know, I can pretend like that's why she wasn't
she
acting.
She didn't say anything because the seal is insane.
Because the seal is insane. Exactly. Because if you mentioned the possibilities of proving weird, so Cena will out-weird you. So I love that Allegra was team Iris. Thank you, Allegra. Doing the right thing. And to the point that when Iris was ready to give up, right? When Iris was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going down the wrong tack. Allegra was there to be like, no, trust your instinct. Look at this file. Like, whatever. I think you're onto something. You gotta save your man. So yeah, I liked all of their interactions. And I also love that Dion was Team Iris.
Team Iris.
Exactly.
I need him to stop calling her mom because I'm trying to see something.
Oh my. I mean, to be fair, he was like, you know, I mean, if Barry dies, like, that's
fine.
He was
very excited for their treatment time.
Exactly. We gotta work on your time sickness. That's what's important to me right now. Anyway, I do like that they incorporated her time sickness into, like, first it's like, well, maybe it's making me see something. And then it's like, wait, maybe wants me to see something. Maybe this is actually useful. So I like that a lot. What else did I like? I loved the ending, obviously. I love when we skip over to this like weird ass future. Ryan's got a rock on her finger. Whose could it be? Iris is marrying Son. In what universe would that ever happen? So I'm very excited for like what that means and how we're gonna get there. And I thought this was one of like the better cliffhangers that The Flash has left us with in a while. It certainly helped make up for any like, I don't know, sense of not unease with you know, things actually happening in the storyline, but like the unease of like, are we gonna be able to pull this off when the story really gets rolling that the first two had gave me. So I think that those are all the words that are coming out of my mouth. But overall, this was definitely my favorite of the three so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it was a really unexpected episode. And, like, I like still being surprised by this show. And I've been also watching Hawkeye, so The Flash's cliffhangers look, like, amazing to me right now, you know? Because that show just ends. It just ends. And I'm like, I don't... Whatever. Anyway. But yes, I'll get to the cliffhanger at the end. But in general, I like the fact that, you know, even if the team was split, the fact that Iris was obviously like, well, if Barry thinks there's something wrong and he doesn't remember, clearly there's something wrong with this reality, with time, something, because they've been through too much to just be like, no, it's, he needs like Cecile's thing is like, oh, he needs help. Be like, no, Cecile, there's something wrong with time. So I like the fact that she got to like, at least when she went toe-to-toe with Cecile, she got to like express her own feelings about Joe and also, you know, stand her ground basically. And that Allegra backed her up, you know, Team Citizen forever. Love that. And that Allegra's also like the one constantly, like, I like, first of all, that Iris has someone on her side. She's not alone in this. And that Allegra's also, when Iris is the one who's feeling down or something going on with her, she's like the voice of reason to give her advice, give her hope or something. So I like that running theme or whatever for their characters. And just in general, the fact that Iris got to express more emotion in this episode, she also got to investigate in this episode, she got to investigate Joe's death or not death or whatever, and we also got a little more of her time sickness, which we haven't really picked up on since they introduced it randomly. And now this felt like the most natural way to kind of tie it back into the storyline, as much as I don't like Iris being sick, but like it's also understand what's happening. But right. I like that it's like tethered to the Speed Force itself, and that also helped her see that there's issues with the timeline that no one else could see because she is, you know, also one with the Speed Force in some ways. So that was really nice. And I love seeing Dion again. I think that he was like one of the better Speed Forces last season. So I like him being back. Mm-hmm. So I like him being back in a bigger way and in a way to help, you know, Iris and Barry without it being over the top mom dad time, you know. I also really liked the fact that, you know, we had something with Barry and Jefferson in the sense that it wasn't like, yeah, there was some action and like the lightning stuff was really cool, and I like that Jefferson is sort of like Barry's person now and vice versa, maybe because they both have lightning powers, but they also really get along really well. So I like that Jefferson is sort of tied the most to the Flash, because I always thought that made the most sense. But also through Jefferson, we got to see moments of, you know, the Jefferson that we love and know from Black Lightning, kind of has got an update a little bit on, you know, his life and in some way, even though it was weird that he said Atlanta. I was like, isn't he in Freeland?
Did he say Atlanta?
He did say Atlanta. I was like, wait.
Chris,
that must have been that must have been like an error. Yeah.
Yeah.
A blooper.
But like
Freeland is a suburb of Atlanta. We don't know.
There you go.
Yeah, like him, like pep talking Barry and him being like the voice of reason, the voice of hope for him. Also getting to learn that, you know, Barry listens to certain music because Joe used to listen to that music. And that was kind of a reminder that, yes, Barry also grew up in a Black household, which was very nice. And just getting to see them like go head to head in the sense of like philosophy and hope and trying not immediately jump to conclusions, whereas is, I guess in this case, it's, he's like the hysterical. He's like, I can't believe I did this. I hurt people, blah, blah, blah. Please end me. And Jefferson's like, no, you need to calm the fuck down. So I like that, you know, Jefferson, I guess, believes in Barry so much that he knows he wouldn't do this and that he would rather see him not quit than just roll over and, you know, allow himself to be defeated by some guy he barely knows anything about and a future he doesn't really know about, which is why I also like where Iris and Dion came in with regards to the still, the speed, what was it called? The negative still force. Mm-hmm. And like Dion letting... Yes, it is. Letting some of his energy go so that Barry can time travel to see what was happening, which is a great cliffhanger at the end because I did not see that coming. I think, like, so caught up in what was Despero doing? How is he trying to manage this? Like, what does he really know? Who is he? What, you know, is he telling the truth? That I completely forgot Bond was really in this crossover, too. So the fact that he showed up in this way, you know, fucking up Barry's life, probably behind him losing his job and making him, you know, go mad. Like, you kill off Joe and you're like, of course that's going to drive him off over the edge, especially if he doesn't remember that Joe actually died and something he could have probably prevented, versus like now you have like keeping Iris in the storyline rather than killing her off Lois style in Injustice or something like that. Now you have Thawne. It's like, I'm your biggest enemy and I will take your wife. And it was It was a beautiful moment. It only lasted
two minutes, which is like
just the expressions that like Barry and Thawne threw at each other right then and there. I was like, oh my God, this is about to get really real. And it was amazing. I love that cliffhanger so much. And the way that everyone even like looking at Barry, like he was some sort of traitor. Like, what the hell is he doing here? Mm-hmm. You know, it's insane to think like how the tables have turned and Barry's worst day ever, indeed.
I see now, like, right when you see that, like, cliffhanger, it's like, okay, I get why this is his worst day ever. And yeah, Mr. Still Your Girl came through, still your life, Barry. I like, there was a huge middle part named Cecile that we'll talk about later, but I thought that I was most interested in Barry's storyline and Iris's storyline. I like that we got to see Barry and Jefferson interact. And, you know, we're talking about, like, Barry listening to Thelonious Monk while he's trying to, like, fix Jefferson's conduit so Jefferson can kill him, basically. I like how they have that conversation about music and him growing up in a black household because that's something that Eric Wallace has said that they've been trying to do or wanted to do if they could ever have done, like, a... Or was it Eric or was it, like... the Black Lightning showrunners that kills. Somebody said, like, if we could ever.
Eric said it at one point last season, and then Nakiel said it again.
If they could ever have had that kind of crossover, then that's the kind of things that they want to talk about. So I'm glad that they got to put that, that little nugget in this one, and we got to see more of, like, Barry and Jefferson's interactions. I do agree. I like that Jefferson, because Barry is, like, hysterical. He is just like, oh my God, you have to strip me of my powers now. And I like that Jefferson is more of like the calming voice of reason. It's like, Barry lost one black dad and went out and got himself another one. Like, Jefferson is like, hold on, hold your horses. You know, why would you believe some alien saying one thing when you know who you are? I know who you are. So why would you? Because like giving up your powers and cutting the connection to the Speed Force is permanent. So, and you know you wouldn't do anything, so why is the conclusion to jump to, like, let's get rid of my powers instead of trying to figure out what's wrong with you and how to stop it? So I like that, even when they were fighting, like, Barry's trying to, like, bait Jefferson into a fight and throwing lightning at him, and Jefferson just, like, redirects, is like, it's your lightning, you keep it.
It was like talking to a child throwing a tantrum.
Really? Yeah, he's like, Barry's, like, throwing a tantrum, and Jefferson is like, sit down. Like, calm down for a minute. And I think that kind of made it even better. Because in the beginning, Jefferson was trying to, like, explain to Barry about why he shouldn't give up his powers. Like, you know, my dad had this mantra to me, and he tells him the mantra. So it's, like, a nice little full circle moment when he, like, finally gets through to Barry after knocking down the sacred Oliver Queen monument. Oh my god.
Not gonna lie, I sort of giggled when that happened. I was like, oh my god.
What would Oliver Queen think of you right now? What did he, this is this what he died for, Barry Allen? No. Okay. So let's like calm down. So I like that, you know, and it kind of circled back to the end where Barry's kind of like, okay, here's the mantra. Recite it. Whose life is it? It's mine. You know, all that kind of stuff. I thought that was a really good moment. I also liked Jefferson, you know, for those who didn't watch Black Lightning, relating the story of Bill Henderson and why he died to, you know, like how he's showing kind of like an empathy with Barry on the situation of losing someone that's really close to you, and how he's dealing with that. So I thought that was a great way for him. I guess I'm assuming this is post the end of the last Black Lightning season, so that now that Jefferson has had time to reflect, is more calm on it and can share that wisdom of, right, you know, what he learned to Barry. So I thought that was really nice. And then on Iris's side, I just liked her being productive and investigating her father's death, because, you know, when she did bring it up, it's like, well, why? Yeah, like why wouldn't we investigate this? You know, I would go and find the guy that pushed him off the track. Like, who are you? And, you know, like, and it makes sense that in this world of the Flash and crazy things happening, like, Joe has survived, I don't know, alien attacks, a sentient gorilla who tried to like kill him. He survived, I don't know how many kinds of like disasters. And then suddenly this like random act takes him out. Like, why wouldn't, even if it turns out to be, you know, just a random act of God and there's no one at fault, why wouldn't you, as his daughter or any of his loved ones, be like, you know what? No. You know, I feel like that's like a stage of grief where you're in like denial, where you're like, no, right, it was an alien. There's something else happened. And so like Barry being like, no, something else happened. I think that was like a logical step for Iris to take, to be like, you know what? Let me go through this footage again. There's something missing here. And to follow through on that instinct. So I really liked her sticking to her guns and doing that. I love that Allegra went and followed her. I'm kind of wondering now, if Frost was allowed to be in this episode, if she would have went with Iris, or I think she would have went with Iris. Yeah, I think so. Like, if Danielle was a better co-star, then we probably could have gotten Frost and Iris and Allegra team up to go
right
to the station. But we don't get nice things, so she was just magically not there. But I think she would have gone with Iris, because I think Frost would also be like, you know, yeah, like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Let's go figure something out.
For so the chaos, if nothing else. Like, yeah, this is the cooler option.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Caitlin had a place with Cecile to talk her down from her insanity. So it would have made sense to me, but whatever. From what we got, I did like that, you know, even like the whole mystery of like the little black sand thing. I'm like, what is that? I don't understand. And so that being connected to the time sickness, I thought was a really great way to bring that back in, and for a way to connect Iris to be able to solve the mystery of her dad's death. I like that she's validated by the fact that there is this stuff here. I love Dion and Iris like teaming up and discovering like the whole isotope and uncovering all of the mystery. And I like that, you know, they show up in the nick of time to save Barry and send him into the future to get to that glorious ending. When they came up with like the isotopes and Dion mentions a negative still force, that was my first clue that maybe Thawne is involved because of the negative speed force. I'm like, right, negative speed force, Thawne, negative still force. And then we get to the future, and I like that you know, we see Ryan and Alex and Ryan Choi there, all these like little people, and then you have like Wells giving his speech, and just the reveal of, you know, him bringing Iris up and talking about her as being the love of his life, and then all of the everybody like staring at Barry like, what is he doing here? I like that Ryan, I get now, because I think when Javicia had an interview and they're talking about, you know, what are your scenes with Iris going to be like? And they said that, you know, it was like they'd been friends for a long time, kind of like a really easy relationship. Like, how are they going to introduce that? But it makes sense now for it to be 2031. Obviously, Ryan and Iris have had some history together for her to be at her engagement party. So I like that it's being introduced in that way. I like that the main issue is in the future. It also makes sense why Mia's will be there. So it's really fantastic cliffhanger. Like, I've been on my Westworld crackhead since season one. It's finally my time. So that was so great.
Tom,
like,
Kavanaugh is cackling.
Ian Barthon, you raggedy bitch. Like, you finally did it. You finally stole Iris. And this is something that could have been done, like, since season one, literally. Like, one of the biggest things about, like, Ian Barthon Way is still, like, Barry's entire life, including Iris and being obsessed with Iris. And I remember being, like, frustrated that we never really got to see that dynamic between Barry, Iris, and E.O. Wells whenever they were doing it. So to be able to finally get this, I think this is a great twist. It makes total sense. And I now know why Joe had to die. Like, Ian Barthon had to get Joe. Like, if Joe was like, no, sir. I do not think so. it's just great, great twist. I'm on my Wes Wells crackhead life. Even, like, Wes Allen fans, even our crack ships get cannons.
That's right. That's how much we win.
Like, I'm sorry. No other crack ships but mine will prosper. the two leads had the best story arcs for sure.
As they should.
I just wish there was more of it. But instead, we get what comes in the No Joys. So who would like to kick off that?
Yeah, I mean, like, everything having to do with Cecile was not joyful in this segment. But first off, like, the top, like, Rosa Dillon is not one of the more interesting villains that we've had. So bringing her back when she's also, like, a kind of psychic person. So I was like, okay, so we're just, like, doubling the psychic power. Like, I feel like we could have just done it with Cecile. We didn't need to bring in Rosa. And then the entire situation.
Like, yeah, they have a whole psychic chair from the thinker.
Right. You could have just used the chair. But instead we had to have the weird, first off, I don't ever want to hear telepathic conjoining again. This is like, that sounds like the worst name for anything. And it was like this, like, weird combo of, like, Cecile's traumatized and, like, Rosa's just, like, feeling orgasmic. Like, I don't understand why this is happening. It was a very weird thing to hear and watch. And it just kept, like, increasing in volume, which contributes to, like, this episode felt chaotic when it was centered on Cecile because she was just so one note and, like, about her grief or despair or whatever you want to say that she's going through. It was all this, like, same loud, violent emotion coming out of her. Which, as you already said, is, like, you know, partially the acting, but also the writing was just odd. Like, I'm just like, why is she being treated in this way or asked to perform in this way? Because obviously the director could have been like, can you stop that? And the director did not.
The director did not stop this. Chris Pepe directed the episode, written by Sam Chalfin. So we can blame Mr. Pepe.
Chris? There you go. I don't know what you were thinking. But anyway, so it was, like, weird. Plus, it was two scenes of it. And first, it was, like, they exploded Chester's grandma's TV, which is, like, a cute joke, like, 15 years ago, right? If it was, like, 2000, early 2000s, you could be like, oh, LOL, she has a TV with antennas on it. Now it's like, that's just, like, a relic. That's in a museum. Like, she's not watching her shows. She's not watching her soaps on this.
And shows don't start at 7 p.m. The show start at, like, 2.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Otherwise, it's not her soaps.
No,
she's just
not
trying to tune in for the flash. So anyway. So that was, like, a little bit like, all right, sure. Which reminds me, I totally forgot to say this in my joys, it brought me extreme joy, the fact that, so this is not actually Injustice, but he is calling it the Injustice Protocol because of the game Injustice. So Injustice, I think, is even what the boys play in Superman and Lois, but point is, Barry has played Injustice, Injustice exists in this universe, And then he named the protocol, if I ever turn out like Superman, you have to injustice me. So that was great. Okay. Anyway, back to the no choice. So yeah, the whole thing with Top, just ixnay. They could have also just combined those two scenes into one scene, 100%. We just needed the one time, it works, and it brings Despero. The end. I did not need more of that. Could have given that to Iris, could have given that to Barry, could have even given that to what Despero is actually planning. You know, I don't know. So anyway, moving on from that. The other thing, it's still Cecile though. Everything is Cecile. But moving on from the top, the way Cecile behaved with Iris was so out of line. It was so ridiculous. I just can't understand if the writers thought that she had a point. Like, are they trying to make it sound like this is just her grief speaking? Because, like, even as someone who's grieving, I think you would know that Joe's daughter, especially when you count your own, like, 3-year-old daughter who has never seen her father in her life, as grieving, then you should also count his, like, 30-something-year-old daughter who has been with him her entire life. Because he's her only parent, really. So that was ridiculous. And she was like, well, I was his baby mama, so obviously I have more feelings about this than you do. And then for people to just defer to Cecile, like, well, if Cecile wants to do it that way, I guess we should just do it that way. Chester and Caitlin, I mean, I know Caitlin tried to, like, kind of, like, calm her down, but I was like, come on, guys. Who?
Chester's a traitor.
Well, it exactly. was in Chester's garage. She's like, she's not leaving my place, so I guess I gotta stay.
But it's like, nobody died and made you the leader of Team Flash, Cecile. This is not the order.
Technically, Joe did die.
Yeah, but he wasn't the leader of Team Flash, was he? and also, he's not dead, Cecile, so no, still nobody died. You're the only one. You believed
like,
the
do you want Joe to be dead? Like, you want...
Exactly, right? Like, why do you want him to be dead so bad, woman? Why wouldn't you believe? Okay, but anyway, point is, she was just very disrespectful to Iris, and I just don't know if the writers realized that, precisely because they use Cecile as the point of origin of something is wrong with Joe to begin with, right? When they could have used Iris being weird. Like, not that I want Iris to behave like Cecile's behaving, so I'm glad they did that, I guess. But, you know, there could have been explanations or things showing that Iris is not her usual chipper self, if you will. And I would have liked to explore that in retrospect. I'm glad that we got to see it in this episode, but it just makes me mad that the first two episodes, you would not know that Iris is dead, was dead. Okay, that's all. Oh, wait, I lied. I don't think that Barry's, like, the plan that Barry had with Jefferson would not have worked. So, the Speed Force would have just come back and been like, bloop, you get speed again. Congratulations.
You can't escape me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Can he permanently cut off? We've seen what it looked like. Speed Force always comes back somehow, so.
Right, he's lost his speed, like, how many times?
Yeah, right? But I completely agree about this stuff. I think that's the stuff that bugged me the most. And with regard to the writing, like, I feel like... I don't know that the writers thought that she had a point. I just feel like they needed to escalate things, but also...
Right.
Parts of the writing, because, like, the writing on The Flash has been okay when it comes to certain arguments or whatever, no matter who's saying the words. But I feel like if her performance had just been, like, quietly seething rather than outright yelling at people, it would have worked a lot better. Like, you could be like, okay, well, she's hurting right now, you know, and then maybe there would have been some sympathy towards her, even though what she was saying with regards to Joe and being, you know, Iris' father and her not being really allowed to grieve in front of Cecile was wrong. So I feel like there could have been ways around that. Her performance was just so over the top, so excessive for no reason. She was just doing too much that even when, like, she slammed down the laptop and Iris just like, ooh, I was like, yes, because that it was just that was too much going on there.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was just, even like her, I guess, wanting to help Barry because he's sick. I'm like,
you need to stop and think for a second. And it's really, what was really frustrating too is because she mentioned, she always mentioning that she's an empath. We know this. We've been told a million times. And then she's like, I can feel how Iris is feeling. I'm like, if you did.
Right.
But the sense that she was also not feeling, or she was also feeling grief about what happened to her dad. Like, I thought our arguments were all very self-centered, and the way that she reacted to it were very self-centered. Like, she was the only person who's ever felt sadness in her entire life, which is also categorically not true. So it was just too much. And her performance, I feel like, took away from even like nuance. You know, a lot of nuance is lost there because of the way that she reacted and has been reacting for two episodes now. And I feel like over the course of at least like a season now, I've gone to sort of being cringy, making cringy faces over, like, I don't know, Danielle emoting. But I can't believe I'm saying this, but Danielle Nicola has surpassed her. And I can't believe I'm listening to this shit right now because her performance is just too much. And she needs to tone it way back. But yeah, that's all I have to say. And it was just too much to see for such an integral moment, for such integral moments between Barry and Jefferson, and then Iris getting to investigate with Allegra about what really happened to Joe. So it just made, rather than giving Cecile a point, they did actually make Cecile look like she had gone over the edge, not even Barry. She was not reacting in any rational way. Emotions be damned. I don't really care what she was feeling or how she was, you know, feeling other people's feelings at this point, because it was just not rational at all. And it just really was frustrating. Like, every time she spoke, I was like, oh my God.
And you know what's like interesting is, I think like after episode two is when we got like someone on Twitter is like, I feel like Cecile is possessed, and we're gonna find out that she is, you know, it's like, oh, so you mean like maybe she's like, her like psychic thing is unconsciously, you know, messing with Barry's mind and making him forget stuff. Like, that could be a cool theory. And it's like, that was a theory because of how crazy Cecile is acting. And I agree with you. I feel like, you know, slowly, like steadily, like Danny's acting choices just get like worse and worse. And I feel like I have to take a step back and be like, is this bad, or do I just not, is it because I don't like this person? And I have to, like, you know, it's just objectively bad, because, like, you know, I had to do that when Wallace Day showed up in Batwoman. Is she bad, or do I just not like her? And then I'd be like, when Chantel, like, gave me PTSD when she showed up on The Boys, I'm like, okay, I have to, like, separate the actress from this character. And I feel like even if I do that objectively, it's just bad. And it's just too much. And I feel like with Barry and Iris having such interesting plots, and there being so little of that to make space for Cecile, the fact that Cecile is over the top and bad just exacerbates how much, like, this was a better episode than what I, like, the Cecile part of it. And the Cecile part was just so much there. And I agree with you. I think it's all, like, one note. She does not have the range to add nuance or emotion to the scene, because even with the words that were in the script, like you said, if it had been like a quiet anger, or if it had been like a sad anger, like, you know, I'm not yelling at you, but I can't do that. I can't go through this again. You know, why can't you just let it be? I can't do this anymore. I would have been like, okay, I see that you're hurting and you don't have the space to hear this. But she's just like yelling at Iris, and, you know, that's her dad. Like, why would your pain does not trump hers anyway, first of all. Second of all, if there's any kind of hope, no matter how irrational it is, why wouldn't you jump on that? Like, do you want Joe to be dead? Like, why would you not want to investigate something being up with his death? That doesn't make sense. And I don't like that Iris does not have they, like, all those words they gave Cecile, but they didn't give any words to, like, I would have expected, if Cecile's coming at me like that, I would be mad. Like, why can't I, like, you know, investigate my death? Why are you being like this? You know, that kind of stuff. I don't feel like, you know, I guess, like, Caitlin, I don't remember what she said. I don't feel like anybody said anything in the moment when she's just like, berating and getting all up in Iris's like personal space. There's no one that's saying like, oh, whoa, 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 let's hold up, let's go to different corners, blah, 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 you know, anything like that. So I felt like Iris wasn't Cecile's supposed to be the empath, but yet Iris has more empathy for Cecile being hysterical. Like, well, okay, well, I'm just going to solve this because I don't want Cecile to be hurting anymore. And Cecile has no feelings for Iris at all, or like, what? Because why would you say those things to her? So I just feel like Danny's one note performance of that just read completely the wrong way. I also feel like her, you know, and then they try to have her be cool and like go to the bar with her like leather jacket and be like, "Hey, Tom, but let's do a quid pro quo, whatever." I was like, you don't. And the fact that she said that she knew Barry better than anyone, like, ma'am.
That was so strange. That was ridiculous.
Ma'am.
Yeah. Hello. It was like they were really trying to push Cecile as, like, the follow-up, like, superhero, you know?
Yes.
Like, the sidekick superhero.
They were really trying to push that, and it just was not, I was not feeling it at all. They started off on the wrong foot with how she addressed Iris, and then they tried to have her act all cool and, like, team up with Top. And I just thought it was, like, just comical. You know, they're psychically connected to all these minds, and Cecile is like having like a mental breakdown, and like Rosa is having like an orgasm. It's just like so different in how they're like approaching it. I kind of mentioned it offhandedly, but I did think it was good that Caitlin, if she was going to stay with this crazy person, that she was there to be the Jefferson to Cecile. Mm-hmm. In that sense, and kind of be like, you know, use her story of Ronnie, because that's the only reason why he was brought up in the first episode, apparently.
So story he could, that we know about.
He could relate the dead husband to the baby mama, baby daddy situation. and, you know, so that worked. But, like, even when Despero was, like, attacking, she just, like, you know, was like, oh my god, it's painful, and it's just over the top, and it's just not great at all. No, it's just overacting, like, the whole episode. And, plus, it's her yelling, and then over, like, as much as I love Barry and Jefferson scenes, it's Barry yelling!
Right, right.
And I feel, I think I brought this up in, like, earlier seasons, I don't think anger is, like, Grant's best emotion. Sometimes I feel like it's a little strained for him, so, and I feel like even with his hysterics about how Jefferson has to take away his powers, there was a lot of yelling that he could have, like, done a little bit more nuance with. So you have him yelling over here, you have Cecile yelling over here, and it's just like, oh my god, it's too much. I feel like Jefferson and Iris had, like, the patience of saints in this episode, because y'all are dealing with some, like, hysterical people. So, yeah. But Cecile was just, like, it just, the ending completely, the last 3 minutes of that episode completely saved the entire thing. Okay, so we have discussed both of the episodes, and we have some feedback for both episodes. I think Anita sent feedback for both, and then we have do we have Suar?
Because I think like, Suar.
He did
back, and Sonia. Yeah, what'd they have to say?
All right, we will start with Anita's flashback for part two. She says, "Ladies, Armageddon part two is done, and I'm only slightly less confused as before, but I guess the highlight of the show is what had everyone gasping in the last 8 minutes. Joe dead? I don't believe it. Yet the subtle clues and buildup were sprinkled all throughout the episode. Those twice a year clever writers. There was Despero, the pain you've suffered nearly crushed you, but so new despair will befall you. All the way to Iris saying she'd have preschooler Jenna, and that they'd been having a really hard time lately. Speaking of Iris, her reaction to her father's death was beyond range. I'm hoping that there will be a twist, like maybe Despero has been manipulating reality or something. Yes, there was.
She was close.
Because Joe was all Iris had except for Barry. Even Mayor Iris can remember the loving daughter's rage and throw Barry out of the house because she didn't get to see her Joe before he left for witness protection. This Iris was so placid and almost absent. While Despero was lame, I called BS on a malevolent dictator ruling an entire planet, sparing anyone. It reconfirms for me that the intelligent life in interstellar space sees Earth and the as desperate doesn't seem that pragmatic. If Joe's fake death is what drives Barry insane, finally, then wouldn't the logical solution be to prevent Joe's death? Does this mean Barry will have to travel back in time and give up his love with powers to save Joe? I know viewers see Taylor Frost as more appealing than Caitlin, but pushing a pacifist to create a destructive weapon, no, I cry foul on that one. She should stop trying to get our dear Chester to be her proxy for violence. Glad to see Star Labs take a far backseat, but it was a major plot twist to Gideon wiped. What? No predictions. I'm on homemade sweet potato pie duty for Thanksgiving. We hope that you had a great one, Anita. And now we'll move on to your feedback for this week's episode. Hello, ladies. I'm speechless and maybe a little deceased at that huge plot twist at the end of Armageddon Part 3. But first, I'm for Cecile. For a long time, I've long been over the show's penchant for letting out of control people unload their entire emotional magazine on Iris, yelling while he takes it gracefully. This time, I was really puzzled as to why Cecile had such a big role in trying to find Barry, and I wanted to headlock her when she said she knows him almost better than anyone. There's only one person who knows Barry inside and out, and all the way to the Speed Force and back, okay? What's going on here? Caitlin was useless and disloyal as usual. Well, big ups to Allegra, A, knowing who her real mentor is, and B, that Iris rarely misses, and acknowledging that things got really intense and asking her if she was okay. If Team Citizen keeps going like this, I'm going to wish for all the good things for Allegra. Also love that Ford Flash Dawn helped Iris and ultimately helped Barry follow his family back, stays Jackie on the timeline. Jefferson Pierce was a fantastic stand-in Joe to help talk Barry out of some of his madness, and the lightning fight was a nice bonus way of Jefferson literally knocking Barry out of a near episode. But about that ending, I loved it, but I detest Dawn, but I loved it. And what makes it so much sweeter is that I know Tom C is going to lord this over Wells moment over Grant forever, here for all the behind the scenes pettiness and mess.
Only if they let us see it.
I know. I would think about how much fun San Diego Comic-Con would have been this year. Oh my god. Miss that. Sad. Over to Sonia. I honestly didn't really like Armageddon Part 2 because I felt like it was so confusing, which I guess was what they were going for as we were finding out what was going on at the same time as Barry was. Also, just want to say, thank God Alex was in that end season in Part 3. Otherwise, I would have been confused as to her role in the crossover being entirely over video. I'm surprised Chester has never built a weapon before. Like, I thought he built a ton of them last season, but it was nice to see that he is a pacifist and why, and that Allegra had his back. Love the ship. I should have known Joe was dead because in Part 1, Chester had said something along the lines of dying or something like that and apologized to Cecile, and then the comments about Cecile and Jenna having a hard time and Kramer suddenly being captain, but just, ugh. Also, I'm glad it turned out to be false, but still. Look, how many times and how many timelines have we found each other? Doesn't matter what anybody says about our fate, our destiny to be together, your fave ship could never. Barry gets fired, loses his Star Labs, loses Joe. They should rename Part 2's title to Barry Allen and a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Cecile being all rage monster over Barry getting fired, like what the heck. Also speaking of Cecile, she annoyed the fuck out of me both episodes. Like, her going off on Barry was bad, but the stuff she said to Iris, unforgivable. Gideon has to be erased. This is sad, but also not so much, since we know in the future Barry does invent her, so he better do so quickly. Barry attacking the team in the loft and then attacking the villains in the city. I can see why he thought he needed his powers taken away by Jefferson, but I'm glad Jefferson chose not to do it. Speaking of Jefferson, the whole where's the future right here thing was amazing. It was one of my favorite things about Black Lightning when I used to watch it. Iris is the only smart one. Like, seriously, even I called that desperate that Barry lost his mind because he loses everything and he loses his job, Star Labs, Joe, etc. Cecile actually lost more than Iris. Like, yes, you lost the part of the father of your child, but don't you dare try and make it seem like you have it worse than the girl who lost her father. Team Citizen forever. I take back everything bad I've ever said about Allegra. I love her. Love that quote Allegra said, as long as we keep the loved ones we've lost in our heart, there's always hope. Does anyone know who originally said that quote? I do not. Am I the only one who does not care about this Cecile and Rosalind combined their powers to find Barry stuff? Cecile is boring and annoying, and even though Rosalind is pretty awesome, of course they nearly killed her to show that Cecile is more powerful and better because she feels her feelings, blah, blah. The Barry Jefferson fight scenes were amazing. Also love that Jefferson saved Barry from Despero, and seeing Iris, Dion, and Jefferson all together was amazing. The melanin. And that end sequence, what the fuck? I've always said that this, I am 1,000% Westworld, but I'm also low-key Westworld's trash, and I'm so glad we get some Westworlds now.
I love that everyone's coming out of their dumpsters.
Right. Is anyone not Westworld's trash? It feels like we're all in this together.
These crossovers love giving me my crack chips. First, I got Iris Oliver and Elseworlds, and now I get Westworld's and Armageddon. I still can't wait for the next episode and seeing what Thawne has planned. Thank you so much, Sonia. And we have Suarez feedback. Hello, ladies. I'm sorry, but what the fuck was this Flash episode? Outside of Iris and Allegra, this was so nonsensical. Cecile was beyond annoying. Talking over Iris about her grief when she's not even married to Joe or spent that much time with him in the last few seasons. I get that they're basically married, but show us that investment along with her basically non-existent daughter. She knows Barry better than almost anyone, acting as if she's been a core part of the team from the beginning. The team members siding with her over Iris, Joe's literal daughter, basically being the one to lead Despero to lead Barry through it all. It both made no sense and was supremely irritating. And I'm sorry to Dani Nicolette, but her performance was way too over the top in this episode, making it that much more annoying. And I'm sorry, but I do not care about it apparently being because she has empathy powers. Barry forgot Joe was dead, apparently. No grief there. Also, on Joe's apparent death, are we actually meant to believe he's dead from tripping onto train tracks? Iris was literally the only one who made any sense in this episode, and the rest of the team led by the nonsensical ringleader looked so foolish. I guess Barry with Jefferson in the midst of dealing with such a third situation was pretty good, but still nonsensical. The ending scene was very intriguing for all its implications. Yes, we're with Iris, but nearly all this episode could have gone in the bin. Woo! Harsh words, Swara. All right. That is
based,
all.
Based on this, do we have predictions for what's happening? Like, what is going on? Like, when, you know, Barry gets to the party and everyone sees him, they're like, what is he doing here? What do we think is happening in this moment? Why is Iris marrying, you know, Eowulf?
I guess it has to be,
flip, right? Like, they think, I was going to say that they think Thawne is very mini, but then he wouldn't be remarrying Iris. So
I was gonna say something like that. Like either it's like a situation that switched where like Thawne, if not Thawne, is Barry and Barry is Thawne. Thawne is the good guy of this, you know,
right,
world. Like, it can't be based on the past that we know. You know what right. I mean? Mm-hmm. It still has to be like a time shift, like a weird timeline where the things that have happened with Thawne in the past did not previously happen, unless of course Iris is like double agenting, like pretending like she loves Thawne in order to get whatever, you know, out of it. Mm. Which I would totally be down for. But if it's a situation,
that would happen only if her time sickness is still in play. Like by the time he gets to 2031, mm-hmm. is she still? Because that would like protect her, I feel like, from Thawne's rewriting of everything.
Right, right. So like that could be a situation, or you know, she's not in on anything and Thawne did rewrite things. But either way, it's definitely a situation where Thawne is considered, but like when Lex was like the president or whatever, and everyone thought Lex was just a great guy. It's like that. Thawne has just made everyone think he's the best. And I think that so Barry too. Is a villain, which is a furthering of what Despero said.
Right? And Barry, I think that makes sense. Then we would see in this reality where Thawne is a good guy, he would be wearing the red Flash suit and Barry is wearing the reverse Flash suit.
Exactly.
Suit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think Barry coming back to 2031 is when the events are happening.
It makes sense why he and Damian Dark are teaming up, because he's a bad guy in a sense. So that would make sense. That'd be interesting to see him like talking to Damian Dark about it. No, I'm not actually the bad guy. And Damian like, sure. Wink, wink.
Yeah. I'm very excited for the Legion of Doom type situation. Shenanigans.
Yeah. So that isn't like, I get now like why Eric was saying that Iris is pivotal to this crossover, and if she doesn't step up, then nothing's going to happen. Like, things are going to go bad. She has to step up in this crossover, and I feel like she did in this episode with discovering the time, you know, isotopes and this rewriting of the Steel Force, but it could also be in this next episode, too, and like we said, whether she's dealing with the time sickness deal and is a double agent, or if she has been completely, like, rewritten or brainwashed or whatever. But her connection to Barry, foreshadow, destiny, we always find each other, is so strong that she gives Barry the benefit of the doubt. She starts to, like, crack and, like, remember other stuff. So either way, it's going to be good, hopefully.
Swords parallel come through.
Yeah. So, moving into...
We just need a solid West Allen moment. That's all I'm going to say. So, I feel like it's getting there.
I hope we get some, like, really interesting Wes Wells moments, too, just for my satisfaction. moving into Side B, though, we had two mid-season finales last week with Legends and Batwoman, Trojan Horse / True Family Business over on Legends of Tomorrow. When the Legends crash in 1940 Seattle, they find themselves right in the middle of a World War II with surprise guest Bishop, who escaped from Evil Gideon by parachuting from a toilet that lands on the time machine. Needing replacement parts to fix the time machine again, Sarah, Ava, Astra, Spooner, and Gideon find themselves working in different sections of an airplane factory alongside the quote-unquote Rosies, Rosie the Riveters, women that have been, that are working to help the boys abroad while they're at war. Sarah and Ava are welcomed by their fellow white women to work in the factory floor. Gideon gets the job as a secretary to the factory boss or whatever. However, Astra and Spooner are relegated to the janitorial staff due to segregation and racism. Spooner, a glass half full kind of gal, uses segregation to their advantage and works on parts that Ava and Sarah smuggle off the floor in the makeshift workshop where the women of color use to work on their skills in secret. But the process is slow and very time consuming, and they need to have 18 of these parts to fix the time machine. So, not willing to spend any more time enduring racism than she has to, business savvy Astra comes up with a brilliant idea to hijack the factory injection molding process to make the parts for them. But she's caught red-handed by the factory manager while she's forging a work order. So, frustrated and upset, Astra accidentally freezes him with her magic, and because he is frozen, she takes over as a shadow boss. To keep the factory from falling behind and thereby destructing the timeline, she and Gideon rubber stamp a wave of successful reforms, including giving, you know, the ladies a bathroom and lunch breaks and all this kind of stuff. But the white Rosies draw the line at desegregation and walk out with the men. So with the factory in danger of falling behind, it is up to Astra to convince the women of color that are still there to complete the manufacture of a plane, which they have never done before because they were never allowed to do it. Meanwhile, Behrad offers to play host to the guest from hell, a seemingly ungrateful bishop, as a way to help teach Nate about Persian culture and etiquette so that Nate can then impress the ancestors when he moves into the totem. Behrad and Zari teach him things about, you know, how to... You know, once you're offered something, you have to say no at least three times before you take it. Or if your guests want something or indicates that they want something, you have to be gracious host and let them have it. And Bishop takes total advantage of all of this. Back on the floor, the ladies finish making the parts for the time machine and they also fix the plane. And when Behrad finally stands up to Bishop and tells him to stop being a leech, Bishop unveils that he does have social problems, but he is a good inventor, and he made a device that allows Gideon to interface with a time machine so that they can better control where they land in the future. Legends are so successful with creating this plane and impressing Eleanor Roosevelt, who's come to check out the factory, that she advocates for the integration of factories 2 years ahead of schedule, tipping off Evil Gideon, who made some legend clones to hunt down their former predecessors. Glenn Winter directed the episode, written by Morgan Faust and Leah Pouliot. What sparked joy?
Many things.
Go ahead.
Well, many things did spark joy. I thought it was a very good episode. I'm so glad. Like, first and foremost, I'm so glad that they finally, like, the little pieces of casual racism that we have been witness to throughout the season finally culminated in a real storyline and payoff, especially for Astra, but just, you know, in general. Because we were commenting several times to, like, it's there, but, like, where is it going? So now we went somewhere. And I love that for her. So I thought that was really interesting. I loved seeing, like, the Rosie, like, the Riveter type thing. And okay, first off, Ava in the assembly line trying to put it together and then just, like, throwing things out was hilarious. But I really liked seeing Spooner and Astra, like, you know, forming their own kind of like coalition, I guess, right? Or like making up their own plans, and Astra really being a leader in her own right. Like, she could be as much of a leader as Sarah is, just, you know, on other things, perhaps. Maybe she's a little bit more like Sarah was in the early seasons, right? A little bit more wilder. I'll have more out-of-the-box ideas, perhaps. I don't know. I also really liked the other lady. I don't remember her name. But the lady that Allegra. Astra spent a lot of time connecting with. I wish that they had had, you know, like, obviously it would have been nice to have more time to flesh out their arguments and discussions, like their different points of views. But for the episode, I thought that Legends, you know, did the best that they could with it. Also, I will finally give y'all some props for Behrad and Astra. That was a nice scene. Woo-hoo. I will ship it now. You know, I will allow it. They have a lot of chemistry. They certainly have more chemistry than most of the straight ships in Legends have had up until now. And it's really nice. More than
Steel Hacker.
Well, yes. It was really nice to see like that back and forth. Of, like, I
that's
know
a low people. Bar, me.
That is. That was like the lowest. True. The lowest of bars. They have. Oh, you know what? Okay, they're on. I don't know. I can't say they're on par yet because, like, the storyline has not been fleshed out. But, like, I got a little bit of, like, you know, Zari and Constantine type, you know, the vibes of, like, oh, excitement, you know, that kind of thing. Not saying the storyline would be similar, but the vibes are similar. Okay. Anyway, I like the whole of, like, I know, I understand you, like, this is what I see when I see you, and then, like, you know, back and forth. And they're both very, obviously, uplifting, positive thoughts that help them do what needed to be done. So that was good. Loved that the women, you know, like, when the white women were racist, the women of color were able to band together and get things done more efficiently, better, and then somehow, like, the Times magazine, whatever it was there, and they were like, this is so great, we love progress. Like, it was, like, obviously a little too, like, okay, sure, I'm sure that happened, but made me feel good. I liked it. I liked that Behrad was trying to showcase hospitality with Bishop. It was like another B. So like their back and forth was fun. And that we get to see, like, this is what a nice Bishop, who is still annoying, is like. This is what a good Bishop is like. And when he was like, you know, like, oh, I thought that you guys were the bad guys, and then I realized I was the bad guy. And then I was like, please, kidnap me, do whatever you want, kind of thing. So he was enjoyable this episode. And I really liked that we got to see a little bit more of Behrad, like, because usually Behrad doesn't talk about Persian customs, right? It's usually, that's like Zari's thing, and then Behrad's like, and now I'm smoking meat. So it's nice to see things from Behrad's perspective. So, yeah, there you go. Overall, very good episode. Oh, and the cliffhanger, of course, obviously. Like, oh my god, there are bad legends, there are evil doppelganger legends out there, and they're gonna take our legends? What's happening? I'm very excited to see where that is going in 2022.
Indeed. To thank Bishop for his sacrifice. you know, nice Bishop really grew on me. He's a good dude overall. Kind-hearted. Wants to help the world and save the legends in the end. So I feel like, you know, he did what he had to do. And I was kind of sad that, you know, he had to do it because he could have couple more episodes. It was really bad. But speaking of Bishop, I do like the fact that he was on the receiving end of, you know, Zari and Behrad's Tarif, which I don't know exactly. It's, you know, I speak Arabic, so I'm not Persian literate, but in Arabic, Tarif means to get to know someone, basically. So that was, like, just really nice to see. It reminded me of my childhood and my mother glaring at me several times until the person insisted I take the chocolate, and then I didn't take the chocolate. So that was very on point. It was just, like, nice to see Persian culture being portrayed on television in such a lovely way for other people to get to, like, be able to know about it. So I really liked that. And I really liked it was sort of Zari and Behrad together teaming up to teach Bishop his ways, even though Zari was very salty about her cell phone and whatnot. But I also like the fact that Bishop realized, you know, that the fact that he didn't make it seem he was grateful for how they were treating him and how they were welcoming him. So he finally be like, I'm not really great with people, but here's a thing that will help you travel through time. So I feel like he just was the MVP of this episode, alongside on the Zari Behrad side. The real MVP was Astra, who, you know, I think does a great, her consistent rage through the episode so far has been building up towards this moment, because she was not going to like stand around and let these people, like her, people of color and black women, be mistreated by the man whose name I do not remember, but the asshole in charge.
Who totally deserves being frozen.
Yes, yes. And so I really like how she handled the situation. She was not going to stand on the sidelines. She made everything more efficient, but she knew that she could only really do it through, unfortunately, if the, like, the rulings came down from the white man at the top. Otherwise, everyone's going to be looking at her sideways or whatever. But I think she handled it efficiently. She made sure everything was in line. She made, you know, lemonade out of a bad situation. You know, the white, racist white women were showing their asses leaving the hangar because they just couldn't tolerate being working alongside non-white women. So
it's just like, I think she's like, you know, see how ridiculous racism is that y'all are in the middle of a war. You need people to build a plane, but this person don't have the same color as you. So therefore they cannot be here. I will suffer by myself. You know.
Yeah, it is really ridiculous. And I'm glad that this episode sort of showed that, because we see not just like racism in passing, but like how it actually affects other things as much as they could affect other things in, you know, in something like a Legends show. So I think that was handled really well, and I like the fact that it gave Ash time and the spotlight to show what she is capable of. And I think that she really came through on a lot of fronts and showed her leadership capabilities and her ideas and her even like giving hope to also the woman, I do not remember her name, but like the lady who worked there the whole time and was always like, no, we must do this in time. Things will get better. And he's like, no, I want to do it. We need to do it now. And it was nice kind of having that relationship in a way. It was very, like, the old woman was very maternal towards Astra in a lot of ways, and I feel like Astra really needed that. But also, like, following her heart and doing, implementing ideas, even if she knew they were, like, ahead of the time or whatever. So that was really fantastic. I love the fact that she had support. She had Sarah and Ava's support. Like, what do you guys need? And, you know, they all kind of pitched in, and it was very, very women of color centered. And I love that. Because so many, especially like in this era and even today, you know, there's so many, black women and other women of color whose voices, like, you never really know what they've done for anyone because no one talks about them. So it was a really,
the imagery is of Rosie the Riveters, or mm-hmm. like white women and what they did. Mm-hmm. And you have all these like unheard voices.
Yeah. So it was just a really nice episode that was very, and very, like, it just ended in a really great way, and also for the plot at the end with, you know, Gideon and the clones of Legends, so you know that things are going to get messy. But I feel like the first half of the season culminated in a way that made sense, brought everyone together, and like really developed the relationship and plot at the same time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this episode for Astra, and I agree with you that it's a great episode for it kind of showed like a different side of what we would have expected, you know, a Rosie the Riveter type episode, like, oh, feminism and all this kind of stuff. But it's, then you see that, you know, you have that twist where it's realistic that that's the way that it happened, but the fact that they went with that instead of the more casual racism route that they've gone in like previous episodes we talked about, is like, okay, well, yeah, but also, you know, it felt like they really made, like Taki said, they made it a point, a storyline out of it this time. And I feel like it was delivered really well. Some of the lighter parts of the episode, I agree. The Lucille Ball, conveyor belt gag with Ava was hilarious. That was really good, you know, visual gag. And I like Spooner and Astra's dynamics. Like, I always like their dynamic, but I like that, you know, Spooner is the kind of glass half full kind of person versus Astra, who's more I don't know, pragmatic, or she's like, well, this glass sucks. I'm going to do something about it kind of person.
Need a new glass.
Yes. We need a new glass, please. Astra standing up against racism and segregation. I like that. And not only I like her storyline of standing up for that, not standing for it just because this is the time period that they're in. I like the conversation that she's having with like the head cleaning lady about, it's kind of like an old generation work within the system, slow and steady wins the race. You got to go slow piece by piece if you want sustainable change, versus the new generation, like, no, we need radical change. There needs to be a shock to the system. Otherwise people are just going to be complacent and nothing's going to get done. So you have that kind of, you know, dynamic going on between Astra and the head cleaning lady, which I thought was like really interesting conversation to have. And I like that, you know, when she does, I think she's really smart too, because she's always smart, because like every time that there's been, a situation has come up. It's come up a couple times while they've been traveling from Texas to New York, where, you know, she took over as manager for the female band group or whatever. And she took over when they were in the car and got them out of a ticket. And she just has all these like really smart ideas, I guess, comes from being a manager in hell. She's got all this like management experience. So I like that she's just smart enough to be able to think of, instead of having Spooner do all these parts by herself and take forever, why don't we just utilize the factory process and injection molding? So I think that she's really smart. She has a lot of great ideas. I like that she, you know, they were rubber stamping things to get to create a better environment for everyone. Because I feel like that's another like point or critique on the stupidity of racism, because like Astra is doing a better job at managing the factory than the sexist factory manager before him. They didn't like him.
Right.
She's doing all this stuff to make their situation better. She's listening to them, giving their suggestions. And then, you know, again, like, you need people. Why it does not make sense why you would have a segregated workforce when everybody needs to be doing their part. And so the fact that, you know, that's where feminism drew the line and walked out, I thought was a twist, in the sense that I didn't think that they would do that. Like, I thought that, you know, Laird would be like, white feminism and is feminism, yay, all the women work together. But the fact that only Ava and Sarah stayed behind while the other white women left and went with the white men and walked out, I thought was an interesting twist. And having the women of color be the real heroes of the story, I thought was great. Behrad and Zari teaching, that's the only good thing to come out of like a Nate-centered still hacker storyline, is the fact that Behrad and Zari are teaching him about Persian culture, because when he learns about Persian culture, then we get to learn about Persian culture. So it was really nice to have that kind of element in the episode, and especially with regards to Bishop and the fact that Behrad was trying to be such a good teacher. I don't know why Nate couldn't try his hand at appeasing Bishop. I feel like that, you know, get some practical experience, Nate. But I like that, you know, Behrad was trying to be his best and Bishop was just like making it so difficult, which leads to the very lovely Behrad and Astra scene. And I like that it there's something in it for both of them. Like Behrad, I like that he put his head on her shoulder. I was like, I'm just trying to see the world from your eyes. See what you see, because what I see is not you messing up, but how great you are. And I like that he gets her to see her passion in a positive light. Because I feel like, you know, she does go off very strongly at times and has these like, you know, huge opinions about things that some people may take the wrong way, but I like that he sees it in a positive light. And I like that, you know, he's like, I admire you because I wish I could do that, because Bishop is getting on my nerves and I know he's getting on my nerves, but I can't do anything about it. And I like that she kind of encourages him, like, look, you know, this is a very great quality about you, but also, you know, just recognizing that part of that is just the voice of conflict and maybe you just need to put your foot down. And that led to a nice little reveal that Bishop wasn't just being an asshole for no reason, but he was actually in his own way trying to help. He's just not great with human interactions, which makes sense with all his clones. So I even like that little twist in the plot for him and the Legends and helping the Legends by creating like that little interface. So all of that was great. And I like the little, there was a look. Okay. So, you know, they're interrupted.
There was, I can't believe I forgot to mention it.
It was a thing and it happened. So I better not go another 2-3 episodes without developing it.
It definitely did happen.
It needs to keep rolling. Come on.
And it was like,
I think that we'll be waiting long enough. We'll be waiting long enough with Eddie. Well, yeah.
Let us release this.
Mid-season, so by the time we come back, they've got a bit of a sword.
And the ending with the Legends being the soldiers, the bad Legends, was great because I think it goes back to my prediction about like the whole like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has done me really well. Thank you for like all the 12 episodes I've watched because it's coming back with like I feel like it doesn't seem like they're gonna do the infiltration route. I think it would be cool if they did, but just the fact that they are bad Legends versus good Legends, I think is really cool. And the two Legends that died were Zari and Astra, and the Legend that was like, you know, pissed off about it was Behrad. So I feel like there's more, you know, there's more little signs, you know, his two favorite people died, quote unquote, or almost died, whatever. But anyway, it's a sign, and I feel like you should keep going with that, writers. Okay, so what did not spark joy?
I feel like now that we've gone through everything, I'm like, did anything not spark joy? Obviously, racism does not spark joy. I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, I guess it would have been, like, I think I already mentioned, it would have been nice to be able to tell a story about combating racism for a little longer than the time that was allotted. But that's not, you know, knock on this episode. But, like, for example, when they had that conversation about, you know, progress is slow, like, long-lasting progress is slow versus we don't have time for for that. We need to make changes now. It is a very relevant conversation, obviously, that we are still having even to this very day. And I think that, you know, it would deserve a little bit more nuanced look, or, like, you know, like, more exploration of what it means on either end. But, of course, this is Legends. This is, you know, it's not... It's not like a, I don't know, down-to-earth drama about the intricacies of life. So, okay. But yeah, so I would have liked a little bit longer on that. And then, like you already mentioned, May, why did Bishop have to die just when he was getting good? Like, I like Bishop now. I want to keep Bishop for another episode. What the hell is this? So that was annoying. But I don't really have anything else. Like, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, okay. Like, I was kind of not saying this in the last time, but, like, obviously I liked Nate, not Nate. I liked Behrad and Zari's plot, and I liked the exploration of hospitality, you know, like what it means, like hospitality means in Persian culture. But I don't like that it was A, 4 day to move in, and B, that, like Jessica said, Nate did not actually contribute. Should have had Nate try it. But anyway, there you go. That's all.
Yeah. Well, with regard to Nate, I just feel like when he told Sarah and Ava that he's like, yeah, I'm moving into the totem, and they're like, oh my god, we're so happy for you. I feel like there was, or maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I feel like there was a look,
it felt fake, that
yes, there was a look of like hesitancy, you know. And so I'm like, oh no, are we gonna drag this out again? He's gonna decide last minute. I'm already thinking ahead, and I'm already annoyed by what the future will hold, because I don't want it to go on any longer. So I don't know, I feel like this is just the first step towards him changing his mind, and I don't like it. Because he's like, oh, the ancestor's not gonna let me, and then there's just gonna be like creating a whole, you know, bunch of issues that didn't need to be issues. I hated the manager, obviously. Like, I agree with Tati, racism is terrible, like, that's not something that sparks joy. And the white woman who walked out, fuck you. But yeah, I don't know. It was a solid episode. I don't like the fact that clone Zari and Astra died at all. I don't like that Bishop died, because now we're probably going to be stuck with some, either the evil version of me, or it's just going to focus on evil Gideon. And I feel like there was a little bit more to do with him before he passed on. But yeah, I think that's it.
I will not harp very long, really, other than, you know, obviously racism bad, the manager horrible, white woman disappointment. And Bishop, when he was in his worst house guest phase, he was really just like the worst. And I feel like he should have more self-awareness, but we see why he does not later in the episode. So whatever. Swara, Swara is like reaching angry to send Legend feedback. He's like, oh crap, I gotta do that. So he sent us some feedback. What did he have to say?
Yes. Swara was so enraged over the flash, he didn't forget. about Legends, he says, I thought this episode of Legends was overall really good. I loved Astra's plot so much, and seeing her outsmart the systemic racism of the era to empower the black and brown women at the factory to finish the job. I thought the Eleanor Roosevelt cameo was pretty cool too. While I still hate the Nate Zari relationship, seeing Zari 2.0 and Barbara teach Nate Tadruf and had my heart. Love that so much, coming from a Kurdish family with very similar etiquette to Persians. The white man is not worthy of knowing our customs. but seriously, it was really sweet to watch. I was kind of sad that Bishop apparently died, but also confused because I thought he had to go back to the future. Are there two bishops? I guess
there's I'll a clone later. Now.
That's true.
There was
overall,
but yeah.
Overall, I really enjoyed the first half of the season and will miss Legends till it comes back in January. I think he was the only person who sent Legends feedback.
I think so. Sean didn't send any this week.
Wow, mm-hmm. You're so unloved. What is this?
we went away for 1 week and just like forgot all about us. do you have any predictions about what's going to happen when we come back between the evil Legends and the real ones?
I have nothing. I have no idea.
I want there to be some kind of like infiltration, but I feel like they made the Evil Legends too cartoony for that to be even be
right,
possible.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It would Which be cool. But
that would be
know
interesting
how.
For like one episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe they will do it for like one episode and then, you know, because
or maybe our Legends yes. will try to, maybe it'll be like a reverse infiltration where our Legends have to act ridiculous to fit in with the clones.
Oh, that would be fun. I love that. I love that plan.
Okay. So, finally, moving into Batwoman, in this season, or mid-season finale, Ryan betrays Marcus by helping Jada's team ambush him in a parking lot to begin his cryo-freeze treatment in exchange for Jada's scientists to manufacture an IV cure to save Mary, who was coming down from a Poison Mary hangover and on the run with Alice. Alice convinces Mary that, you know, we are sisters on the run for life. And mm-hmm. Mary decides to help Alice by giving her, they like hitting on like random guys at bars to find out their blood type so they can give Alice a blood transfusion, pump out all the nano blood that Alice has that allows Luke to track her and replace it for nice, fresh, trackerless blood, which, you know, sexy. Meanwhile, Sophie gets pulled back into the Bat team after having a one-night stand with Renee, and she kind of, like, slips up that, you know, they're looking to apprehend Mary, and Ryan's like, how do you know this? And she's like, well, you slept with Renee? Like, you know, we have one argument and go sleep with Renee, who's, like, blackmailing me? Very cool, thanks. But they have to, like, get through that and work together to find Mary. Jada is almost successful in freezing Marcus, but he puts on the sob story and sob tears, and she gets too close. He breaks free and goes full Joker, incapacitates her team, and steals Mary's Poison Mary cure. He goes over to Gotham Tower to blackmail Ryan into giving up her stake in Wayne Tower in order to, in exchange for the cure that will save Mary. And if she does not have this cure before, sundown or sunrise, one of them, they have 12 hours to get her this cure or she'll be Poison Mary forever. Meanwhile, Mary is discovering more about her powers, like the fact that she can now hypnotize people into doing what she wants, which is helpful when you're trying to get people to tell you their blood type so you can just take all of their blood. And she's, you know, she's feeling a little bad and she likes it. She completes the blood transfusion on Alice, and Ryan gives over her shares of the company Wayne Enterprises to Marcus, steps down as CEO, and races to get this cure to Mary. Luke figures out how to track Mary and Alice because Mary used her coffee rewards points, and it kind of shows how well Luke and Brian actually do know Mary. But when she meets up with Mary and Alice and tries to tell Mary about we have this cure, she is shocked to hear that Mary does not want to be cured. She does not want to be saved. She's giving up on the bat team because they gave up on her first. And so she chooses Alice over the bat team. And the timeline is finished. And she goes full Poison Mary makeover with red hair and outfit to match. So Ryan has no Batcave, no Wayne Enterprises, and no Mary, and no Sophie. Well, she's there, but, you know, there's now like a there's now a wall, a Renee-sized wall between them. Marcus is now the new CEO of Wayne Enterprises. He has dyed his hair purple, and he never cared about Ryan and their fake sibling relationship. He is gone full Joker. And Mary, who sees him on the news in his press conference, is very intrigued and thinks he looks fun. And she is down to have some fun. let's see. Holly Dale directed this episode, written by Kelly Oda and Emily Alonso. What sparked joy?
Well, I certainly felt joy being sparked by Mary's Poison Mary outfit, and by the fact that Alice kept calling her Poison Mary. I like this nickname. Also, the entire Alice and Mary team up felt good. I mean, we've been waiting all this time for, I guess, like, Mary to have some family, even though Alice is not really the kind of family I want her to have. But still, like, they both feel abandoned, neglected in different ways, right? And maybe can provide each other some twisted kind of comfort. So I did like that scene where Alice was like, well, would you rather trust them or trust, like, me, like, your last family member? Even though, like, Jacob's not dead, y'all, but we're gonna act like he is. He's dead to us. So
we're gonna pretend he is.
Yeah. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. All those scenes at the bar were a lot of fun. I like the visual effects for Mary's little hypnosis, you know, Poison Mary powers. The scene where Ryan tried to give her the cure and she, like, you know, broke it. I don't know. Just, like, threw it in her face, but, like, literally, you know, got rid of the chance to take the cure. Was very sad, but also, like, it felt like it still feels like a culmination of all those times that we've been like, but what about Mary? And so now you're like, well, this is what happens when you ignore Mary for too long. I think that Marcus makes, like, a really fun and scary villain. So I'm looking forward to seeing him going full Joker, and the concept, the idea of Mary trying to get in on that and that being some kind of team up. I also love that. Like, imagining if Alice is going to be like, yes, 100%, or like, actually, this is actually too much for me. I don't know.
So it's getting crowded in here.
Exactly. So I think that could be a lot of fun. I'm glad that the activities between Sophie and Renee sparked something in Ryan, whether it's like sadness, betrayal, jealousy, whatever, all those negative emotions, right? Like, I'm glad that we are kind of addressing them, at least acknowledging on screen that it is a problem and that it is going to go somewhere with that dynamic, right? It feels like they're building up Batwoman or Ryan and Sophie much more evenly than they did. I don't know if evenly is the right word, but, like, they're pacing it much better than they did in season one, where, like, sometimes they're just, like, nothing for a while, and then just, like, so. I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. Overall, it was a pretty good episode. And also, that was the cliffhanger, right? That was mid-season finale, so a good stop-pause point for now.
I agree. Yeah, I was wrong that, you know, Mary would go back.
Keep pulling one episode, soon. Yeah.
Right? It was getting like 30 or 45 minutes. Like, she has not changed yet. I'm guessing we're in the long haul.
I was like, wait, the outfit's not here. I mean, I was mad about that. But I think that her dynamic with Alice was really good this episode, especially since, you know, they had a whole we're on the run vibes going the whole episode, working together to get Alice's blood type and Mary using her powers that she didn't realize she still had when she was just Mary on other people, and seeing like the, I guess, Mary pushing the boundaries of what it is that she can do and how much she's sort of enjoying this sense of power, considering like the fact that she didn't really have that much, or she didn't think she had that much before. I really like the fact that, you know, Ryan and Luke both realized they were wrong for like overlooking Mary, but they had some going on, but now they're really all in and trying to help their friend. And the fact that like Ryan even makes the trade between Marcus and Mary, you know, choosing Mary over her brother and actually handing him over to Jada, was something I did not expect. And I thought it was a nice twist, especially at the very beginning, because then it kind of, like, we had two emerging villains in this episode. We had Mary and Marcus, like Marcus going full on Joker and Mary going full on Poison Ivy. I think a lot of green. But I really like how those two stories kind of paralleled each other, and also just to show how much Marcus was really fooling everyone, including Ryan, because she, you know, he was the one person that she thought maybe she could have some sort of familial relationship with, and that didn't well. And as much as it hurts, I thought it's really great drama. And also just like the tension between Ryan and Sophie. First of all, that they made up so quickly, because Sophie's like, I get it, you know, you couldn't tell me because you know, this grid, this whatever her excuse was, made sense to me because, you know, she had grids before too. Well, yeah, she hasn't, but she understands and she empathized. So that was really nice, but also then more tension because Sophie did sleep with Montoya and Ryan is very well able to. So I like how this ship is still sort of a ship, but they're flailing in the water right now, trying to find the shore because happening, but there's like a lot of tension and Montoya is kind of stuck in the middle right now. So I'm really enjoying the scenes of this triangle. It's really, really nice.
I like that Montoya doesn't even know she's in the middle.
I know, you know, soon find out, I'm sure. But I just love tension building in this episode and just kind of seeing all the possible a place, the issues that Mary was facing in terms of like feeling neglected were finally coming to the forefront, in the sense that, you know, she was standing her ground. She's like, I'm not going to go back. You know that you didn't really treat me right. So her deciding to give up the antidote was surprising. Again, makes for great drama. It was like her choice to become Poison Ivy, even though she was freaked out about being Poison Ivy before. Now she's sort of like stepped up for where that takes her, even if it means leaving her family behind. So I really liked this episode. There was a lot going on and it really sticks for me in a lot of ways, like Ryan giving up her CEO position gutted me, but also was just a great way to kind of like set her up for, it's really the season's like setting her up for failure later on, and she has to like gain all of that back. She has to regain Mary's trust. She has to still figure out like what's going on with Jada and her other family. So it's like a lot going on for Ryan, and I like that she's in the middle of all of it.
I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was a great mid-season finale. I agree. I love that we have like a dual villain origin story, both with Marcus and with Mary. I think Marcus, you know, I could kind of like tell, it was kind of like telegraphing that, you know, he's like, Mommy, come closer. It's like, don't go closer. Stuff will happen. But I like that he kind of embraced the villain and just went full, like, he stopped pretending, you know, that he was anything like normal and just went full Joker on everything. I thought it was like a twist to me that he was never trying to be any kind of like sibling relationship with Ryan. He was just using her to get to Wayne Enterprises, which kind of makes me wonder, like, if she had been on his side, what would he have done? Like, how would that have worked out? But at any rate, I think it's really interesting, puts Ryan in a really interesting position going into the back half of the season. She just inherited Wayne Enterprises. She inherited the bat last season. She's inherited the business this season. And now she's lost that to basically the Joker. And that'll be really interesting to see how that progresses and what she's going to do about it. In fact, that the Wayne, the Batcave is right underneath there. So now they don't have access to that. What are they going to do in the back half of the season? How are they going to like solve crimes? Where are they going to set up shop? All that kind of stuff. So I feel like that's a really interesting direction that they're pushing that into. And then with Mary, I think it's like, I always, you know, from the previous episode when she didn't know what was happening, she's like, oh my God, how could I hurt anybody? We need to chain me to the Batcave and don't let me leave. And then, you know, this episode, even in the beginning when she's coming down off of her Poison Mary hangover, like, oh my God, what did we do? And, you know, all this kind of stuff, to see her kind of like gradually, like you said, May, pushing the boundaries of what these powers actually mean and what can I do with them. And, you know, the way that she's able to compel people to listen to her when we know from previous episodes, that's something that people didn't do. No one listened to Mary. No one gave her any time. Now she can compel them to do that. And I like her relationship with Alice and how Alice is kind of like, you know, twisting it into, she's still kind of like manipulating Mary, like, you can't go back because they're gonna like lock you up and, you know, we're all each other has. And I feel like at a certain point, Alice was probably planning on getting her blood transfusion and being on her merry way and having Mary like be on her merry way. But as they kind of like keep on continuing talking and Alice is trying to convince Mary to turn to the bad side, you really start to see them bond. And like you said, Tati, there's this weird kind of sisterly bonding where they kind of get each other. And I like that Mary brought up the point again that, you know, because I think Alice was trying to like push her a little too hard. Mary's like, oh, well, maybe I should, you know, just forget about the time that you the last blood transfusion was because you used some kind of like blood sucking vampire. You distract that blood sucking vampire with my blood, which had the rose thing in it, and only had the rose thing in it because you gave like the vial of the antidote only one between me and my mother, because you poisoned both of us and had to choose my mother's life or mine. You know, so I like that she, it's not completely like Mary has gleaned on to Alice and is, you know, full on the Alice train. There is that little realism there that Mary still knows that this is what Alice has done, and she's not going to gloss over that. So I do like that that part was brought up, because I feel like that adds a little bit more realism into their dynamic. She knows that she's still kind of like, this is what happened, but also where she is in her journey in her life. Alice just kind of makes sense, and Alice kind of understands in a weird way that what she's going through. I, of course, loved her costume change reveal and the red hair when she's going full Poison Mary. She's in like her, you know, dirty Christina Rihanna good girl gone bad phase kind of thing. Oh my God. So I think that would be really fun. And I should have explicitly made this prediction, because I felt like Mary and Marcus were going to be a thing in some kind of capacity, with her being Poison Ivy and him being like the Joker and them kind of like crossing paths. I think that'll be really interesting. It feels kind of like, I don't know, like the George Clooney Batman movies with like Poison Ivy and Mr. Freeze and all that kind of stuff. It feels like you get like really campy in a good way. So I'm excited to see what that looks like next season. What did not spark joy?
I was trying to think of, like, what did not spark joy, and I'm like, I feel like I always pick on poor Luke, but I just feel like I would like him to have a bigger reaction about Mary being, you know, lost to them forever. So, you know, I just feel like Ryan and Sophie are, you know, going at an interesting pace, and I'm like how much we're getting of it. And obviously Mary and Luke are not as important as Ryan and Sophie, but I would like to see a little bit of that progress. So more, please, Luke. But on the other hand, even though, like, you know, obviously it's, like, good for tension and for the cliffhanger that Ryan just lost Wayne Industries to the Joker, I'm also like, again, if we had gotten to see more of Ryan, like, working on Wayne Industries, or, like, what it means to her, or even to Luke, because that literally he's been there, like, his whole life, then it would have more impact now that she lost it. But it was like they set it up so that she could lose it.
Brought it out that they didn't have the CEOs or whatever, the mm-hmm. board didn't have faith in her. If we had seen more of her trying to right the ship.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I would have liked a little bit more, just a little bit more emphasis on that, so that then we can see what she really is losing, aside from, like you said, the Batcave, which will be interesting to see what will be the new makeshift Batcave. But yeah, I don't know that I really have. I mean, I guess it was a little sad that Marcus never really planned on making her his sister, or like having a family relationship with her, because I think that the element of him feeling betrayed and thus more, you know, willing to turn to the dark side would make sense and parallel him more with Mary and Alice. But instead, I guess it's not really like that. It's like he's just evil. So, okay. That is all. Otherwise, it's very
upsetting. I agree about the CEO stuff, because I feel like there was one episode, maybe two episodes ago, where Ryan's like, I don't give, like, she's going to fight for the company. I was like, but where was the fighting? I did not see it on my screen.
She said it, and they were, like, impressed. All right, we're done.
Yeah, it's sort of becoming, like, you know, I guess this happens with all superhero shows, but more about now the Batwoman side of things versus, like, the everyday side of things. It's like, who is running Wayne Enterprises? What are y'all doing when you're not downstairs in the back? So that would have been more interesting to see. And still don't have Hamill Fox. I don't buy Hamill Fox right now because they're not showing us anything. Like, we had that moment 8 years ago. And then,
hey,
we could have had more moments.
Coffee and points, you know?
I take the crumb. But I feel like because they knew Mary was headed down the Poison Ivy route, they could have used Luke and their relationship together to build that up, build Hamill Fox before she actually turns. And that way I would have felt like more of the tension, more of his feeling upset. And she actually decided that she was going to be Poison Ivy and she did not take the antidote, versus like now it's just like, okay, you do know Mary, but like you barely have spent time with each other.
You
at least
do
one
know
of
Mary.
And I would have liked to seen more of it. And I'm very upset that we did not get that, because it just felt like they gave us that one tease and we never got anything else after that. And I feel like that was just a missed opportunity, especially now that Mary is with Alice full time for the time being. And like, besides Ryan, I feel like Luke trying to draw her back would have
maybe
made
we'll
more
get that
sense
next season, in the latter half. Wait
for next season. No. But yeah, I hope so. But for now, it doesn't feel like it is a ship that I'm on board with, because they're not putting in the effort.
I can see that. I mean, I don't really have as much or like much to say on the no joys. I will say though, just like disclaimer, I wanted this. I wanted her to go bad. I'm with her in her journey. So I have to like stand in it. But I am concerned. On the one hand, she chose, when Ryan's like, we have a cure for you, we can save you, and she's like, I don't want it. She chose to go bad. So, you know, she has agency in that decision, whatever, whatever. But on the other hand, I'm just thinking, like, Alice literally ran over a guy with her car And Mary is like, you know what? Let's just leave him here, you know, to die. I feel like that's, I feel like that's a choice.
She broke her bureaucratic oath.
Yes. And so as
and
much
so
as
so soon after she became a real doctor.
I know. And so, like, even though I am happy for her to have this kind of growth, because I feel like, you know, like I said, I went on this whole soapbox last time about how she needs to take up her space and own it and take up all the space. And villains do this. I am the only thing I'm concerned about is losing Mary, because the last episode where she's just like, oh my God, how could I have done this? All this kind of stuff. When she's like blacked out and doing her poison Mary thing, she never, even though she did bad things, she never actually killed anybody. And I feel like with this, this episode, when she's like, let's just leave this guy here to die, that was like one step closer to not being Mary. I don't want her to lose Mary. I want her to be a villain and do all that kind of stuff, but I don't want her to lose the core of Mary, because I feel like that'll just make it harder to bring her back. And I still want to bring her back. So, you know, I said it. I'm on the ride, girl. I will stand for you in all of your villain glory. I just, please don't kill anybody. Because I want you to come back at the end of this journey. Feedback.
Yes, we have plenty of Batwoman feedback from Anita, who says, hello, ladies with gumption. I hope your Thanksgiving wasn't for the birds. Yeah, okay. So there seems to be a common theme between Batwoman and Netflix, with all these people leveling up and doing new things. But let me say that seeing Ryan sign over Wayne and her to Marcus felt a lot like Star Labs getting shut down, only really sad. I'm always rooting for Ryan and to see her try so hard to keep her chosen family intact while her blood family run amok. Well, I say cut those blood ties loose. They are toxic. But yay for the ascendance of two very interesting villains. New Joker looks like a lost cause to me, but there'll be hope for Mary. The glowing eyes was like a callback to when Caitlin would reluctantly go kill her Frost. But have a new identity crisis storyline with Poison Mary, shall we? I'm rooting for her too. Plus, how are the poor of Gotham supposed to do medical care just now that her clinic went legit and she officially graduated and everything? I predict that they get Mary back, but that Ryan doesn't exactly shake off her toxic blood family. They will reappear from time to time, or maybe Ryan's biological mother will be a more permanent fixture in Gotham. And Sonia has Batwoman feedback. She says, first of all, before I get into any feedback, I just need to say that while I did like the Mary and Alice sisterly bonding, Alice is 1,000% gaslighting Mary and emotionally manipulating her. Alice pushed all the right buttons to ensure that Mary, who was terrified of turning into poison, turned into poison ivy anyway, so that Alice could groom and corrupt Mary into being her ideal sister, aka someone as selfish and evil as she is. Ryan said it best when she told Mary that just because she loves her does not mean she can let her hurt people, but because Mary has been manipulated by Alice, she can't see that distinction. And okay, anyways, and rant on to my feedback. Ryan working with Jada to get Marcus and have him frozen so that Jada will get a cure for Mary. Also nearly cried when Marcus stood in front of Ryan with when those two cars showed up like he was their protector and she betrayed him and whatnot. Now, obviously, writing this feedback, I know he was just playing all of them, but still in the moment, I felt bad for him. Swamp Thing reference. This season is doing so well with Easter eggs.
Oh, I forgot to mention that. I love exactly, that, too.
I didn't exactly go home last night. While more tension and Luke looking like he'd really rather be anywhere else. Is this Luke's Batwing AI? Oh, yeah. Apparently, you just ripped it right off and almost took his arm along with it. I sincerely hope he's not left-handed. I love Alice. Also, I love Mary literally running to throw up. Here's what she did to Ryan and Luke. She's such an innocent BB. Why Jada was standing so close to Marcus was so dumb. Like, you know what your son is capable of. He should have been kept in a room by himself with no one anywhere near him. Marcus talking about how Lucius Fox used to come around all the time makes me think even more that he's Ryan's biological father and Luke and her are half siblings. I thought that too.
Agreed.
Doesn't
this make Lucius a cheater? Like a cheater, pumpkin eater?
I mean, how much do we really know about Lucius Fox, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he could be.
Yeah.
Tarnishing Lucius' reputation.
And I think that was interesting because I feel like Luke put his father on such a pedestal that to find out that he cheated on his mom would, like,
right? You know, are we really doing
make
that?
Make him look at him like a full. We shall see.
And he'd be like yelling at his AI, his AI dad.
I trusted you. No. Luke fighting Marcus was insane. Like, he actually did pretty good for a guy with a busted arm. Thank God he's okay. Even as Poison Mary, still a do-gooder, telling that random guy to donate plasma because he has a rare blood type and telling another random guy to keep a stroll in check. Guess you can take the girl out of the clinic, but you can't take the clinic out of the girl, which is seen later when Alice hits that police officer. Mary's like, we have to stop. He could be hurt. Also in love with the scene where he's like, that's our Mary. Leave no reward point behind. And Sophie's all, looks like her better than you think. Like in episode 3, we had Alice shipping Hamill Fox to Mary, and now in episode 7, we have Sophie shipping Hamill Fox to Luke. Ryan had to give up
ship yourself, Industries. Make a jump ship.
Did they do the writer's ship it, Sonia? Ryan had to give up Wayne Industries for the cure that Mary didn't end up taking and ended up getting destroyed. What the fuck? Also, how Ryan said, I gave Wayne Industries for nothing. Luke was like, you did it for Mary. That's not nothing. Like, hey, more him, Fox crumbs. Mary looks so legit at Poison Ivy, and I can't wait to see her and Marcus team up. Also, gotta say, I love the representation the show brings with Black Batwoman, Black Joker, and Asian Poison Ivy. Can't believe we have to wait until January for new episodes, but I see from the promo that some ball. If we don't get Hamill Fox at least a little bit, I will be angry. That's all for now. And then finally, Sarah has Batwoman feedback. That was a fantastic Batwoman mid-season finale. I love how much they're upping the stakes. Even though the season is a bit shorter than usual, I do think it overall makes for stronger and tighter storytelling, making the season thrilling to watch. Connecting Marcus with the Poison Ivy plot was really well done, and seeing Ryan make the sacrifice of Wayne Enterprises for the potential to save her dear friend, only for Mary to reject it, was so well done and so heartbreaking. I love how the dynamic between Mary and Alice has been developing. I barely expected this, and the show and the writer did such a great job at showing it to us. Can't wait for what's next. And that is all the feedback.
Any predictions on what's happening next year?
Other than we'll find out who Ryan's biological father is, and that right. Jada is still hiding something.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll just say not to take away Mary's agency. Like, yes, I agree that Alice is manipulating her, but I'm going to say that most likely the way that we're going to get Mary back is that, like, the Poison Ivy pheromones or whatever the hell it is actually do affect her mind, right? To the point that, like, she, like, falls under the Poison Ivy spell, too, in order to be, like, Poison Ivy. And not just, like, Alice is right, everyone sucks, and I should just let people die on the road.
I think that, like we are saying, because obviously Mary is going to team up with Marcus because she wants to have fun, which is it's really interesting because, like, once she becomes Poison Ivy, they go back to Gotham. And I feel like that wasn't Alice's plan to go back to Gotham. So I feel like that will kind of cramp Alice's style because Alice will want to get away. And then also the fact that maybe Mary and will gel with this crazy person, Joker-esque Marcus, that Alice might actually go back to the Bat team. It's like, look, we have to save Mary from this crazy person. And that'll kind of get her back to the Bat team, and they will then work to get Mary back to the Bat team. So that is my prediction. And my prediction is that Marcus will be too crazy for Alice.
That would be an interesting dynamic.
And then finally, Lady with Gumption of the Week for, I guess we can choose two for the Flash if there is two. And then one for the others.
I feel like Iris for the Flash, Astro for Legend, and Mary for Batwoman.
That's
so, just Iris for the Flash. And then you said Astra and then
Astro for Legends and Mary for Batwoman.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, of those three finalists, who is the ultimate winner?
Oh.
I feel like
it's between Astra and Mary, to be honest. Iris.
I was going to say Astra for me. I think that because
For sure.
I agree with Astra. She has like Also Astra had to work against
Astra can't disappoint me.
Right. And also Astra had to like fight against the influences around her, whereas Mary was giving in to the influences around her.
Okay.
That's true. And she had to fight the system as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sucks.
Which sucks. So, true. Yeah.
Definitely,
true.
Definitely go for Astra.
Okay. So Astra is our Lady with Gumption of the Week. Thank you for joining us. So that concludes this episode of The Flash. Tune in next week where we will just have one episode. It'll just be all Flash all the time. We'll talk about the craziness that will potentially happen in episode 4. And then for the week after, on the final week of Armageddon, on Twitter, we have spaces now. And so we are going to attempt to do a mini live spaces session to talk about the end of Armageddon for that time. So mark your calendars, mark your little time things. They'll be on the end of the Eastern time zone showing of The Flash. So if you are around for that, mark your calendars for that. We'll try and do kind of a mini Lady of the Gumption debrief over what just happened. So in the meantime, stick around. Next week is a regular Lady of the Gumption episode. You can always send us your feedback for this next week to ladiesofbegumption@gmail.com, or you can send us ask on Tumblr, ladiesofbegumption.tumblr.com. And we will just see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.